Hello.
Good morning, or afternoon.
Afternoon.
Yes. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Good, hello. Good.
Hey, it's hello. Crossed.
Crossed is in the house.
Did you get that mask from the 3D the book or what? And you just cut it out or?
No, I got that from a con.
Oh, I want one. Why didn't you get me one?
I might have an extra one.
Mm.
God knows where it is, though.
God has nothing to do with that mask.
Who knows where it is in this disaster area of a room?
Ah. So did you go to a con yesterday, Bill?
I did go to a con yesterday. I had my con day.
Well, tell us a little bit about it.
I made it. I actually extended it too, because I not only did I have a con day, but I also had a panel day. So it was a full con experience for me.
Cool.
It was a homemade convention in my basement. No, not really.
Isn't that what it's called? Dan's Basement Con or something?
Dan Con.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's a show here in Chicagoland. It's actually one of the southern suburbs, just I think it's south of the city. Anyway, it's about it took me about an hour to get there, a little under an hour from where I am in the northern suburbs. It is a convention that was started last year, I believe, by Decapitated Dan, who I think his website is decapitateddan.com. I'm not real sure. But he does reviews of horror comics and horror movies and things of that nature. So probably regular comics, too.
So it's a horror con?
No, it's not. It's I guess he started it because there was no local cons on the south side of the southern suburbs of Chicago. So he wanted to bring something to that area. So he started a convention, and I think last year he had like 20 creators there. This year there was 50 creators, and he said 50 creators and 10 dealers. And they hold it, it's in a suburb here called Orland Park, and it was at the Orland Park Civic Center, which is a small little civic center, I guess. I'd never been there before, but it was two rooms. When you first walk in, there was a big room with the kind of like the artist alley, so all the creators. And I would say there was probably about, let's see, about eight times, 10, 4, probably about 30 tables or so with creators. So it was like in a U shape with tables on either side. And then there was a separate room that had the dealers. And that was probably equal in size, but it was just a standard, you know, what you'd expect at most conventions, dealer area. And to get in, it was $3 to get in, free parking, because it was just at a, you know, civic center. So I'd say it was kind of in between a hotel con and a big con, a bigger con. It was nice that they had so many creators. That's something you really don't see at hotel cons, where hotel cons are usually a bunch of dealers and then maybe one or two creators. Sometimes no creators.
Any big name creators, or were they mostly like local creators?
They were pretty much all local creators. I think probably Midwest creators, or people from Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, Ohio. So the general kind of that area.
Uh-huh.
The biggest names were, I should bring up the list so I know how to pronounce the names, because I'm going to screw it up otherwise. Okay, let me do a search. Dan Con. Would you say you think?
I think you'll screw them up even if you're reading them off.
That's true, but maybe it'll be less likely. Here we go. Creators. So the biggest ones, Corey Hamsher.
Don't know who that is.
Hey, dude, you just don't recognize the name. Cry because I'm trashing the name. He did... He's a guy, he did...
I've heard of that one.
He's done Avengers Academy.
He's drawn it? He's an artist?
Yeah, he's the artist on Avengers Academy. He did a... I'm blanking on it. I think he did The Infinite, maybe? Maybe not. He's doing Supreme now with Eric Larson.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. They canceled that book, didn't they?
I don't know, did they?
Corey Hampshire.
Yeah, I know they canceled Avengers Academy. He's done Incredible Hulk, Scar, X-Men Forever, Fear Itself, Chaos War, Deadpool, G.I. Joe. He's really good. Mostly people, more recently, I guess, for Avengers Academy. So he's a pretty big name. He's from Indiana. And then they had Hilary Barda was there.
I've heard of that person.
Because he's a local dude.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had some guy who, I'm not sure what his name was, but I was at one table and he's like, we were talking about the creators there. And he said, did you see so-and-so? He's done a bunch of covers. Mark Stegbauer.
Hmm.
I don't know. It looks like he's just inked stuff, but mostly it's just smaller creators with their self-published books. The guy who does Arsenic Lullaby was there because I think he's from Indiana. Big Dog Ink was there because they're Chicago. I don't think they're Chicago based, but they have people in Chicago. One of the guys lives in my area.
Yeah, I think it's Tom Hutchinson.
I think he.
He's the owner of the Big Dog Ink.
Yeah, but it's weird because I think the address for their business is somewhere else. So, but that might be where they do distribution out of somewhere else or something.
Yeah.
Or another person who works there. But yeah, those are some of the bigger names. But those are the ones you see at every con anyway. So, you know, it's the big local people.
Yeah, I'm friends with Tom on Facebook, and it said lives in Chicago, Illinois. So.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun. I mean, so you had the creator area, and that was cool. I picked up a few books there, which I don't have near me, so I can't read off the names of them. Dang, that was poor planning. I didn't get that much from the creators, but
we like how you prepare. You're always
prepared. Yeah, I know. I spent hours preparing. I did bring in the books that I read this week. Look at that. I did bring them in after all. I'm a genius with preparation. So I can't find the one. I got this one that I'm interested in reading called Awesome Five. It's from Alternate City Comics. And it has it's kind of like a superhero parody type thing. Got a couple of anthologies. Not too much from the creator area. I'm never sure. I figured out a trick, though.
Is this the trick so you don't feel peer pressured or what?
Yeah. So here's my new trick. It's like I go up to a table because it looks kind of interesting. I start flipping through the book and the person behind the counter, you know, says hello and tells me what their book's about. And then if I'm not interested in it, cause I can see that it obviously sucks.
It's not for you.
Yeah. Then I ask them, then I'll be like, sometimes I'll mention that they have a website or whatever else, or I'll ask so do you have a website or whatever? And they'll say, oh yeah, I'll have to check it out. Or some of the things are like their web comics also.
Yeah.
And they're just collecting them. So I'm like, oh, I'll have to check out your website. So that way they don't, I'm hoping they don't feel so bad that I'm not buying anything. Because getting someone to go to your website is also a win for them, right?
Well, it is. Unless you're lying.
Not as big a win as money is, though.
I guess
it could turn into money one day.
I feel real peer pressure, but I think that I've gotten older and I don't really. If I don't like it, I'll say, yeah, it looks cool, but it's not for me or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and some tables will do that too.
Somebody, it just that doesn't appeal to me.
Yeah. And sometimes I'll just be like, oh, cool, thanks. And then just walk away.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you never know. I mean, until you. Even if the idea sounds interesting, once you pick it up and flipping through it, you may just see it's like not for you.
Yeah.
Like, I picked up one guy's book and it sounded interesting, but in the comic, it was mostly, there weren't a lot of words. And when there were words, it was kind of like text, like a lot of text rather than word bubbles. And I was like, eh,
not what I'm looking for. I don't normally read text. I did read some this time because Crossed had a little paragraph at the end, but that was it.
And the dealer area was pretty good. I got a bunch of stuff there. There was one guy that had like a bunch of weird old, like he had some weird old indie stuff. He had a bunch of old, like not very good quality, but old, like 35-cent cover price issues and the like. Some older DC stuff and some older, I don't know, some weird comic companies that aren't around anymore.
Yeah.
So that was cool. And they were cheap, so. I like occasionally picking up stuff like that just to check it out. So it was fun. And then, so I was there from 10 to 1. And then at 1, I had to quickly get in my car and go up north to nearer to my house to a library where they were having a presentation on, I think it was called Making Comics or something like that, with Russell Lizow and Gene Ha. They were talking.
I've heard of Gene Ha. I don't heard of the other guy. Gene Ha's a big time artist.
Yeah. Yeah, he's doing Phantom Stranger and Justice League, or has done them
I
recently.
Think he's doing Justice League. Phantom Stranger, yeah. I haven't seen him on that.
He was on number 6 for sure, because I picked that up from him.
Oh, okay. I did see him on that because I just read it.
Yeah, Xander Cannon did layouts and Gene Ha did the pencils and the inks.
Ah. It was a different style than what's been there before. It used to look Tom Mandrake style. But, yeah, that's cool. I just read that.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah, I got that, and I got Justice League number 7, which I probably already have now that I think of it. But I got those for free, and he was cool. He said, if you buy something from the Russell Lissau, then you can have one of these. You can have these for free. So it's like, all right.
What did you buy from Russell LaSalle?
He had a couple mini comics that he had printed up with him there. He's done some stuff for Ape, and he did Batman Strike. He was on one of the Batman titles. I think it was Batman Strikes, and he's done Strawberry Shortcake, and I think he did some Shrek stuff. So he's done more all ages type work.
Did you learn anything?
Some stuff, yeah. Not a lot of stuff I didn't know before, but it was interesting to hear. It was interesting to hear those stories. The one thing I was surprised by was how young Gene Ha was.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's been around. It seems like he's been around forever.
Yeah, he's doing Alan Moore stuff.
Back in the day, he's doing Alan Moore stuff. But I didn't catch how old he was, but I think he's in his 40s, maybe like a couple of years older than me.
Yeah.
So maybe like mid-40s.
So he just looks young.
Well, that's younger than I thought he would be. I figured he would be
Gene
Ha? Age. Yeah.
You thought he'd have a huge beard.
Yeah, huge beard and like those things on his fingers. Nails. Finger extender things, yeah. And the casting spells and stuff.
You're disappointed.
he was really cool though. Both of them were real nice. And Gene Howe was awesome because he was talking about like how he goes about doing the art for the comics and stuff, and how he works like with DC. Mm-hmm. And he passed around some of his artwork from, I'm not sure even what books they were from, but man, his stuff is nice.
He had original pages?
Yeah, he was just like passing them around.
No, but was he selling them or no?
He wasn't selling them. They were just for us to look at, so we would pass them around. I'm like, dang, how can I sneak one of these into my bag? And then afterwards, it was cool because there's a few kids there. So afterwards, he grabbed the big whiteboard and said, I'm going to teach you guys how to draw stuff. He said, give me anything and I'll draw it for you and show you how to draw it. So he showed them how to draw perspective, and then he showed like a horse and then like Superman and stuff. So
was he pretty fast?
Yeah, he was doing pretty fast sketches, but.
How did he do on the horse? Because I hear artists have trouble with animals.
He was showing like the hints on how to draw a horse, like the different shapes that make the horse. I don't know. I wasn't really paying attention. But it was cool that he was doing it. And then afterwards, whatever kid, like, asked him to draw the object, he would give them the page, so.
Yeah.
The Superman one turned out real nice.
Cool. Yeah, I went to one of those small cons where the artist just had, like, panels, and there was, like, literally, like, 15 people in the whole panel with, like, Phil Jimenez. And he was, like, sketching real quick, showing how to draw and stuff, and then at the end of the panel, he was giving them away. I wanted them so bad. You know, you have an original, like, Phil Jimenez. You know, how he was, even if it was, like, backgrounds or showing you a foreground or whatever, it would have been awesome to get it. But I didn't get any of them.
Too bad. Yeah, and Gene Howe was talking about his method. I guess he first pencils the page, like, on a regular size. I think he's, like, a regular size, like, 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, and then scans it in and then prints it on blue line, and then does the inking on the blue line. And he showed some pages he had where he just did it on, like, regular, it wasn't the, like, thicker Bristol paper that comic art's usually done on. It was on, like, a flimsier paper. He said it was still, like, acid-free paper, but it was paper. And the inking, instead of doing it with the brush, he did it, like, with markers.
Right.
And it was, like, gorgeous. It's like, man, son of a bitch. People and their talents. I hate talented people. Make me feel. So it was fun. But it was a good day for me. Got to buy comics, got to go to Artist Alley, and got to see a panel. So it's like,
Is it a one-day con or a two-day con?
Just a one-day con. But they have one in the spring and then one in the fall.
That's cool.
Yeah, so I had a good comic day yesterday.
That's good.
Convention day. Good. That keeps me, re-energizes me for a while.
Yeah, I need to be invigorated with the Comic-Con here soon.
I probably won't get to go to another con for like at least a month.
Yeah. C2E2. I miss cons. The one that I think the closest one I have is in April. And man, they haven't announced anybody except for like local people that I see all the time. So I think it's closer to DanCon, but
that's the one that's connected.
That's the one that last year had like Phil Jimenez and the creators of Chew and JT Krull and Freddie Williams, and it had a bunch of creators last year, and this year it's got like nobody that's big. And what was awesome about it is it was so small that getting to talk to them and do stuff was really accessible, like for long periods of time. Yeah, I like talked to Tony Bedard forever. And it was pretty cool.
So that is the one. Are the there's
are you or, breaking? Are you breaking up, Mike? Are you hearing Bill or? Are you there? I think Micah left, or he's on mute.
I was on mute and I couldn't find the cursor, so I couldn't unmute myself. So, but now I'm here and Bill is breaking up. So
you're having problems again.
I wonder what it could
be. Maybe you need to shut down your whatever you did last time.
Does it sound better now?
Oh yeah, you were chopping up.
Weird.
Stop your downloads.
Hang on, let me pause.
Are you downloading Crossed or what? The Wish You Were Here.
Downloading Hippie Marsala.
Oh jeez. I want you to watch that so you could tell me. You
I actually did watch part of it.
Oh, God. Did you? Oh, Micah, we haven't heard from you. What have you been up to?
Stuff, work, school, you know,
usual
things. I watched 7 seconds of it, and I wanted to murder everybody in that movie. So,
if you watch the first 10 minutes, you don't miss anything. It's the same shit over and over again.
Yeah. Here's my story. I'm watching it. Not much is happening. I'm like, come on, they got to get to it. I'm like, it's not terrible, but there's really nothing happening. And I'm like, okay, this has got to be almost over. And then I looked to see where I was, and I was like almost halfway through. I'm like, forget it, I'm done.
Did you get to see the part where the guy is getting aroused by the cow?
Yeah, I saw the cow.
I don't know what it is, but every time I play with the teats, I get aroused.
So what was that movie called? Hippie?
Hippie Masala. It wasn't about American hippies. It was about European hippies.
I know, I thought it was going to be American hippies.
So did I. The way it was, the way it introduced it, it sounded like American hippies, didn't it?
Yeah, they said they're coming from the west.
Yeah, and it really.
Which I guess
They are coming from the west. Yeah. I mean, on a map,
it's not far enough west.
I mean, they all do the same thing, though.
Yeah, so it's about a bunch of people from Europe who got arrested for smoking pot and then decided to go to India.
And India wanted to get rid of them and sometimes send them back a couple of times.
And India would send them back and then they would come back again.
Yeah, it was like not. The people that they focused on was just not interesting to me.
The one dude, the gray haired dude with all the hair on his head.
Where he'd wrap the.
Yeah, the hair on his head.
Yeah.
I want to be a yogi. Because all you do is smoke a lot of dope and just like, that's it. You smoke a lot of dope.
And sleep on the floor.
Yeah, sleep on the floor. And
drink tea.
And
I mean, it's only accurate if you like go over as like white dude to do that kind of stuff. So
it was very spiritual to him. But the one thing I found interesting about that dude smoking dope and whatever was he came from a rich, rich family. Like there. I don't know if you got to the point where he said that he went back to wherever he was from, and his family was like well-to-do. Like,
yeah, his father was like a CEO or something.
You need to get a job. He's like, you got to cut your hair and get a job. And if I got anything out of it, it was like maybe he hated his lifestyle so much that he just said fuck it and went into spiritualism or whatever you want to call it.
I call it smoking dope in the forest.
And then the other couple that he hated, I mean, his wife hated him. He came from, I think it was from Switzerland, and she married him because she said, oh, this white guy is going to get me out of here, and I want to leave here. And he ended up building a farm there and fucking the cows. And.
He was like a junkie or something, wasn't he, back in Switzerland?
Yeah, he was very much into drugs and trouble with the cops. So he was in bad shape in Switzerland. But
I don't even think that guy was a hippie, was he?
I don't think any of them really look like hippies. Like, not the hippies we know.
Except for that woman. The woman from Belgium. Because she seemed kind of like a hippie.
But she came out of nowhere. Like, she didn't even have a story. She was just there. She was just there in a trash can rowing her boat. Or they were rowing her from one side to the other side. And she talked a little bit, but you don't really, like, she's on the phone and, like, what the fuck is she talking about? Why is she on the phone? I didn't like it at all.
And then there was the one guy who just, like, the artist guy.
That was the only guy that had, like, I thought a meaningful life, that he was, like, making progress. He was painting. He was building the house.
He was drawing Indian women.
But he was building the house, too. Wasn't he the one that built the house that had the marble? You didn't see the end of it. Never.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah. But
I fell asleep.
Yeah. I don't blame you.
So, like, by the end, was there any, like, point to it?
No.
Okay.
If you saw the highlight of it, the guy is the guy and the cow. That was the highlight. And the other highlight was when they were talking to his wife, and she's like, I hate my life so much, I want to just leave this place and be by myself. I was like, damn, she really didn't like her husband.
This cow farm.
Yeah. We butchered the hell out of that movie last night. It was like 2 hours worth of hippie masala. Keith rated it 5 stars.
He did?
He would.
Why? I guess I have to listen to the episode to find out.
Yeah.
What redeeming value there was in that. It wasn't bad. It just, there was nothing there, hardly.
Yeah, I feel sorry for Daryl. He attacked. He got really drunk, like, the second episode. And all of a sudden, we started talking about our fathers, and it just got really awkward. And Keith just made it worse.
So was it drunk Keith and drunk Daryl?
No, Daryl was sober.
Oh, I thought you said Daryl was drinking.
No, Daryl drank to try to get through hippie masala, but...
Oh, okay.
So what you guys been reading? Anybody want to go first?
Micah can go first.
All right, I can go first then. I read comic books.
Liar.
Yep, you're right. Let's see. No, I read something. I read Glory. I read the penultimate issue of that, I guess. So,
is that your favorite comic?
As far as what's... Yeah, I mean, that's being produced right now, yeah.
Yeah.
At least for another month or so. Did you get it, Bill?
No, I haven't received it yet.
Yeah.
I heard it's awesome, good, though.
It is. It's quite good. I don't want to say anything since Bill hasn't read it yet, but, like, it is basically a 30-page fight. Not 30-page. 20-page fight scene. So.
Maybe you guys could tag team next time.
Maybe.
The book's been getting better and better.
But it's almost over.
Yeah, I know.
Next issue is the last one, so.
Yeah, I found out that Dan the Unharmable ends with issue 12, and I'm like, damn.
Oh, does it?
Damn.
Was it planned to do that, or?
It might have been, but it never seemed like it. If you read it, it just seems like it's going to keep going, like it's an ongoing tale of this guy.
Right.
With different arcs.
Oh.
It might be that they just were going to do it based on sales. If there's enough interest, they'd keep it going, but they could end it at any point.
Mm-hmm.
Glory, man. I love that book.
That is quite a good book. So let's see. What else is there? There is... I read other books, I'm sure.
You're reading Star Wars.
Those are like books.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of them. So I'm trying to figure out all the ones I haven't read yet. which is quite a bunch. It's like five. I don't know. I think there's over 100 Star Wars books, like novels that have been released, or something similar to that. The same way there's 1,000 Star Wars comic books that are out. Like, so they just keep cranking out books. I finished a couple in the past week or so. They tend to be easy to read, because they tend to be, at best, mediocre. Like, so they're fast reads, so there's nothing really too much to worry about when you go through them.
That sounds not good, though. If it's mediocre, it...
Well, it depends on, like...
It sounds like you're reading it just to finish it. Like, oh, God, this is not...
For some of these... Yeah, for some of them, I am finishing... I am reading them just to, like, kind of... like, get through them. Other ones are actually enjoyable, but there's a good bit that, are not as enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them suffer from the problem of wanting you to have a lot of knowledge going into it and relying on your enjoyment of the property to make the story better. It's like, since you like Star Wars, the idea of this sort of thing happening should be exciting to you.
Well, yeah, we know you love these characters, so seeing them do anything is going to thrill you.
Yeah, but it's like, actually, no. If it's a poor plot, then it's a poor plot, and that's not going to help anything at all. The problem is, like, there's a lot of books that are not well-conceived in a way. Like, they're set thousands of years before anything we care about. And they involve characters no one's ever heard of that are completely uninteresting. And there's a lot of philosophizing. Like, it's basically, stay away from any book that is supposed to take place, like, in the Old Republic era, outside of, like, the Clone Trooper books. Like, anything involving, what is his name? Drew Kapirshian or whatever? I think that's the name of the author. Like, he's a bit of a train wreck. And apparently he's in charge of writing all this, like, Old Republic stuff, and he's not awesome, and his books are boring as shit. So, but the one I'm reading now is actually halfway interesting, but I just started it, so this one just came out, I don't know, a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, something like that. And it's about Han Solo and Chewie and Lando Calrissian pulling off a heist somewhere. So it's basically just a heist novel that involves...
That sounds pretty good, actually.
So that's more fun, like, it has a lot more going for it than a lot of the other books do. So,
yeah, I've never read a Star Wars book, but I think if I was going to read one, I'd enjoy, like, a smaller, more self-contained type story.
Yeah. Yep.
With the characters that I like.
So good. I would say I grew up reading Star Wars novels, like some of the the stuff they put out. I guess
early stuff, like Han Solo at Star's End or Splinter in the Mind's Eye.
Some of those books, New Jedi Order stuff, like a lot of that sort of Legacy of the Force thing. Up until they, like, killed Chewbacca, which made no sense, and I think a lot of other characters, like, randomly died off and so forth, but yeah.
Food's ready. So,
it's lunchtime, man. It's lunchtime.
Claire got off early, so there's a lot of stuff going on in the kitchen. But yeah. Her food is ready. Let's see. What else is there? Let's see. Oh, I did finish Sullivan Sluggers.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because we had a question from somebody about that. Let me see if I can find it while you're talking about that.
Okay. So, Sluggers is, if you didn't get the if you didn't get it, like, I wouldn't be too worried about it. It's weird, right? Because, like, awesome. Story is, like, it kind of falls off after a point, and it...
Yeah, I'm not expecting much out of the story. I just want to look at the monsters.
But
the gore
kind of there.
What are you waiting for, Bill? Did you support the Kickstarter, or is it...
Yeah, I got it. It's on my shelf.
Oh, you just haven't looked at it.
I got 6 billion books to read. Ah. I'm waiting until I die. I mean, I'm waiting until I retire.
Oh, jeez. Bury them with me. Bury them.
Bury them. Take my eyes open and put them on my face.
Or burn me with them.
I was going to say mix my ashes in with the comic, but then I was like, oh, what's his face did that?
Yeah, Kiss. No, that who did that?
Grunwald.
Wait, what?
Squadron Supreme.
Mark Grunwald did that?
Yeah, the first collected volume of Squadron Supreme had his ashes in the ink, I think.
Holy shit, I didn't know that. I was a fan of Grunwald. His Cap and his Squadron
Supreme. He's awesome.
Just, his storytelling was so... how could I explain? It's like... It was like a run-on story that lasted forever, but it was... He was good at sequential storytelling, is what it was.
Yeah, he's very wordy, but that was back when you could be more wordy.
Yeah, well, his storylines would last years, but you'd always get payoff in a single issue.
Yeah, and each book would take you at least 40 minutes to read, too.
Yeah, they're dense. They're awesome, though. What he did with the Captain America and Serpent Society was awesome. Mm-hmm. It was really good Cap books.
Yeah, he did Cap for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And Squadron Supreme is one of my favorite miniseries. I have the volume with his ashes in it.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, that was the first print.
It's just really weird. It's a really weird movie.
He loved comics so much. Well, he knew everything about comics, too. That was the other thing.
When you wrote that letter to a comic, did you cut your finger so you bled on it with ink?
Even if I did, it still wouldn't have made it into the comic. So.
Yeah, printed that in blood into the comic.
We got this letter in blood.
But yeah, the story dies. Like any interesting facet of the story is gone, I don't know, 20 pages into it, and basically... It's a series of, look at how cool James Stokoe could draw stuff.
That's disappointing.
I mean, to an extent it is, but like, you know, better that than have it be really wordy.
Well, the question, and I kind of had to figure out what this was getting at, but it's from Olokin on Twitter. I don't know who that is. Olokin Prime, at Olokin Prime. He says, would the Sullivan Sluggers fiasco dampen the mood for Kickstarter comics? And I didn't really know what the fiasco was.
All right, here's the fiasco. Mark Andrew Smith apparently...
made extra money?
No. Partly.
To start, so he did his Kickstarter and raised over $100,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it proceeded to slowly ship out issues over the next year or so. And to date, not everyone has received their issues.
Right.
So he's slow in getting it out. And I heard he had an incident with the artist, Stokoe, because...
Well, he didn't have an incident with it.
Well, him and Stokoe have been going back and forth because he paid Stokoe for a work. In other words, I want you to draw my book. Here's what I'm going to pay you. And then the book made a lot of money. And then Stokoe got upset because he didn't get any additional money,
that's not true. He didn't get upset that he didn't get additional money. He just... Yeah.
Go ahead, Bill.
He wanted his name taken off of it.
There was bad blood between them. I don't think it was over money. I think it was just because Stokoe didn't like the way he was treated. And Stokoe had never involved in the Kickstarter. He pretty much... disavowed this book from the start. It was a job he got hired to do. He drew it, and then he pretty much wanted nothing more to do with this guy after that. And then, so he had kept quiet about it, and he didn't talk about it at all through their whole Kickstarter and through the shipping problems and everything. He stayed out of it. But then Mark Andrew Smith started another Kickstarter to raise money for shipping because he undercharged on the shipping rates internationally. So it was costing him more money to ship the books internationally. So he wanted to make more money. So He started, this is what was weird. He started a Kickstarter to raise the money to ship the book using the book as the, whatever, the reward. So basically, he was using
$1, by the way.
What?
The Kickstarter goal was $1.
Yeah, so he started, goal was $1. Yeah. So basically, he would make any money that he made off of this. And people kind of got upset because at that point, he's just using Kickstarter as a storefront to sell his book.
They kicked him off, though, didn't they? They stopped that?
It stopped. I don't know if they kicked him off or if he stopped it. I'm guessing they kicked him off.
I think it's they Which kicked him off. It's weird
because, like, they'll take anybody, so.
But
Well,
but
I think have... he broke... He, there are rules for Kickstarter, well, and I think he
Well, not
broke
really.
Them.
Because a lot of other companies have broken the rules on Kickstarter too. Like yep, the Penny Arcade thing breaks the rules of Kickstarter explicitly, and they didn't care about that because it made them a lot of money. So,
right, there was notably one website who theirs was to raise money so they didn't have to have ads, which is also not what Kickstarter is for. But they didn't stop that one. Kickstarter at its heart is you want to bring something out, you want to make something, you raise money to be able to make it.
That's the idea.
So, yeah. So then there was this. The other part of it is. So then there was all this controversy over this second Kickstarter, and people started talking about how Stokoe got screwed. And so Mark came out and said, "No, he didn't get screwed. I paid him this money to do this book, and he actually took forever to do the book, and it's not my fault." And he went so far to say that Stokoe caused his divorce.
Yes, I actually read that letter, and that's the one that I read. So what I was telling you was, I guess, false. I saw one side of the story.
No, yeah, Mark Andrew Smith totally handled this all the way the wrong way. Like, all the way the wrong way.
And he was kind of attacking Stokoe, saying, it wasn't me, it was his fault. He took too long to bring out the book and destroyed my marriage.
It's totally a Frito Corleone moment, and he's just freaking out of shit.
And that's how did he destroy a marriage? I don't understand that.
Yeah,
is there something in that book that
his wife? That's a better story.
Yeah, that's surely that was the only reason his wife left him.
Because Stokoe's pages were late.
Yeah.
If you can't get an artist to get these pages to me on time, we're through.
Because of that guy, I'm leaving you. So then that's when Stokoe came out of the woodwork and said, hey, wait a second.
Yeah, like he hadn't really talked up until, like he had said a few things, but nothing like he was keeping his hands clean until like Dacre started getting thrown in his direction. So,
yeah. And then even after that,
anybody's reaction if they say, you caused my divorce, is like, what are you talking about, dude?
Yeah, and he, to his credit, he didn't even come back against that stuff. He just said, you know, first he said that I didn't get screwed. I got paid what I was agreed to get paid. I don't have a beef with that. He said there was some stuff on the business end that I didn't like, so I have nothing to do with this book. But he didn't throw any daggers back, basically.
Yeah.
And he handled it
very well.
He probably thought about it, because your first response is, you motherfucker.
Yeah.
He probably has somebody who he knows, who's his friend, who says, don't get fired. And so you write the email out, and you always send it to your friend first before you send it out to the public or whatever. And that person can be like,
what you do is you write the email, and then you don't send it. You go to sleep, and then the next morning you read it again.
Like, holy shit! What was I thinking?
Oh, good thing I didn't send that.
Yeah, it's always good to not do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I've made the mistake of first reaction, and ever since I did that, I haven't done it again.
It's good to write email. You get it out of your system.
Yeah. Do that. It's always good. You get like
Don't even fill in the two address. Then you can accidentally send it.
Yeah.
Just leave the two blank. Write your email. I've done that for work many times.
Because I have a friend who sends me all of their who sends me all their emails. When they're angry at something, and they just automatically send me the email, and I can reply with no.
just no. And then they're like, okay, I guess you're right. So, yeah.
So, you thought the story was mediocre, but the art was nice.
The art is great. The story is mediocre, too, in some places, just, like, stupid and bad. Like, you know. But it's, like, it's weird, because I don't know if it's stupid and bad, because I don't read a lot of horror comics, and so I'm just not familiar with how everyone's supposed to be stupid all the time, or if they're actually just stupid and bad. I think, like, a lot of horror movies suffer from, like, stupid and bad plot choices. But they have to, otherwise, like, you wouldn't be able to do more scary things. But, I don't know. But my perception of the story isn't colored at all by, like, any of the Kickstarter drama, because I seriously couldn't care less about any of that, honestly. Like, I would care if I say I had bought the book and the book never showed up and then he was selling more books to people. Like, then I would care. But it's one of those things where you can only care as much as it affects you sometimes. So
yeah, I mean, you paid your money, you got your book, so
it's like, yeah, well,
deal with that. Yeah, I'm going to read up, and I'm going to read it for what it is. Yeah, I don't care. I mean, what this guy does with his business or whatever, his business ethics or whatever.
The thing is, I feel like this dude is doing more to hurt himself than any, like, you know.
So it hasn't dampened your mood about other Kickstarters, essentially.
No way.
And you got your hardcovers on time, right?
that's the point.
Yep. Yeah, like, it doesn't. I don't think it has anything to do with the Kickstarter model.
I might look a little harder into, like, some people's backgrounds before donating anything, but I don't do a lot of Kickstarters anyway. So, like, I haven't gotten screwed yet. Like, there's a lot of stories on Kickstarter about people getting screwed. They said they put money into something and then the thing just, like, the company fizzles out or it never comes to fruition, and all, like, a lot of stories about Kickstarter's just failing.
Yeah,
I've gotten most of my stuff. There's still one that I donated, like, at the very beginning, and I still haven't gotten the issue.
Yeah, I got a few that I haven't received anything yet, but it's just because they haven't come out yet.
I mean, I have one where I've only received part of it, but it's understandable. Like, the people who are doing the Kickstarter have been coming forth with information, like, every time something happens. So,
right,
I'm not worried about not getting it.
I haven't had any where the person just disappeared. Yeah. I was reading about one last night where there was some webcomic collection where. It was a couple of years ago, and I guess the book still hasn't come out, and the creator isn't responding to any questions.
Because they're in Cancun.
They're sitting pretty with all the money.
They're going to start it for $1 and raise a lot more money and then send the book out. Maybe. Maybe.
And I think people are wondering, like, if you raise $100,000, I mean...
No, he screwed up. Like, he screwed up on this one. It is possible to misjudge international shipping costs, and the book is big. Like, it's not a small book.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
It's not going to be cheap to send out, but he screwed up. Like, especially when you see how much he raised and look at the number of backers and this sort of thing. And
it's probably because he spent the money before he sent it.
Or he got the Kickstarter and his wife got half of it, so...
Yeah, he spent it on a divorce
lawyer.
I'm on half the Kickstarter.
So the lesson is don't have marital problems when doing a Kickstarter. Is that what it is?
Don't let James Stoko into your bedroom. That's what I like. It's gonna go bad for you.
All right. Anything else you read, Micah?
I'm sure there is, but...
Well, if you think of it, let me know.
Let's talk about books. And I'll probably think of it whenever it shows up.
All right. I don't know if you read this, Bill, but you tweeted me earlier in the week about reading Crossed, Wish You Were Here.
Yeah, I didn't read that.
I read that.
Simon Spurrier and Javier Moreno.
Hold on, wait. I did read something real quick. This will take 3 seconds.
Okay.
I got more issues of Alan's book in, and I think the time off has done him, not like time off or whatever, I guess, but like the sort of re-evaluation of his artwork has done him some good.
He's got some new techniques.
And a Kickstarter, if you want to get the
trade paperback. But yeah, that's it.
So it's number 3?
And 4.
And 4 came out. I just got them this week. I haven't read them yet.
Yeah. I got them as well. I haven't
got them yet. Cool. So, yeah.
And those covers are really great, too. So.
Yeah, you got some good people on board to do those.
Yeah, you got Robert Atkins on 4.
Ah, nice. That is who that is.
Yeah.
The colors are good and everything. It's nice. So, yeah, just wanted to bring that up.
Juan Castro inked it. I actually know all these guys on number 4. Robert Atkins, Juan Castro, and Simon Go. Or Goff. Goff. I think it's like Goff. Goff. He's a colorist. They've all been on DC Noise. So
you read the trade?
I read the trade because I don't usually read webcomics. I know I'm bad, but...
I don't either.
I sometimes find that I like them. I like read them. Like Monica, I follow the one that's always on DC Noise. And
yeah.
I follow her webcomic when I catch it. But is if she collects it, yeah, if she collects Detective Fausto, I'll buy it. Because I buy the webcomics that I read. The other one is Subculture. Like I just... bought a Kickstarter for Subculture where I get like a omnibus collected edition of everything that's been published from Subculture. And I was introduced to Subculture through the comic anyway because it used to be published by Ape Comics. But
miniseries.
I have not visited the Avatar site to read Crossed. I find it really unique that they offer it because how do they verify your age? Because this is filthy, but...
Yeah, the first page is filthy.
Yeah, the first page was rather shocking because the scene opens up with this guy. He's on a watchtower, and he's watching a cross guy fuck a dolphin through the blowhole. He says, I'm coming, mommy! Singer, you from a boy? Sing! But these fuckers are nuts. But this is a weird... story. This is unlike any of the cross stories I've read because usually it's a beginning, middle, and an end, and then it's over. And this one has a beginning, but it doesn't have an end. It's like it's more close to The Walking Dead than any of the other cross stories because the cast is still intact.
Right. It's an ongoing.
And they're on this island, and they've managed to secure the island. It has a natural security, but they've actually managed to secure the island.
It's a very small island in Scotland. Is that where it is or something like that?
Yeah. And you can only get there by boat. It looks like the water's pretty shallow in some areas though. But they're able to detect, they have arms so they can shoot the cross before they get to a certain location.
But, they have watchtower on one end of the island. They have a watchtower, and the other end they have a lighthouse.
Yeah,
where they keep guard, and someone's always on patrol, watching with binoculars to make sure
things work really well if they have their system. But their system is really monotonous and boring. So if somebody makes a
webcomic?
Yeah, it's a webcomic that was collected into trade.
I think
Bill read the trade.
Right.
Gotcha. So, is this, I guess it's tied into the rest of the cross stuff then, right?
Yeah.
It takes place in the crossed world, obviously. So.
Okay. Well, yeah.
But none of the crossed world... All the crossed are just different factions of people.
Right.
They don't... It usually is like a 4 to 6 story arc, and the people don't usually survive. I mean, it's... they usually...
Yeah, very rarely.
Dying. There's maybe one or two characters I've seen survive. This one is more like they've secured their position, and you're learning about the characters... Which their lives are kind of pretty horrible. But, you know, the scene opens up with this kid. He's fishing out on the boat, and they see the crossed. They try to warn the kid, but he's got his hat on, and he's not paying attention. They kill him. And then this guy's documenting it. He's basically making a diary. This guy's occupation was a writer, and he was a comic book writer. So before the outbreak happened, that's what he was doing. He was, you know, writing comics on his laptop or scripting them.
Right, so and he's always talking about like what a useless. So the one thing that's really interesting about this is it's told from that guy's perspective, and it's really about how life has changed and how you're going to deal with this new world, and this new kind of micro society they have on this island. And he talks about how of all the jobs he could have had. Being a writer is like the most worthless thing to be in a post-apocalyptic world. Like, what are you going to do as a writer? There's like nothing. You're useless.
Yeah, and these guys decide to have a lottery. There's two guys that rule the island. One's a fisherman, and one was a professor of some sort. And one of them rules, like, he's kind of like logical, but obviously the professor is the more logical one, but he's an asshole. He comes out as pompous ass, pretentious.
It's got a Napoleon complex.
Yeah, Napoleon complex. The fisherman just doesn't want to leave the island. He wants to keep everything the same, monotonous, not do much.
Right, he's happy. We have our little world. We're safe here. And
yeah, let's not deviate from the procedures. Whereas the other guy's more like, we're running out of food. Let's make a lottery. Let's do a lottery to have somebody go out, look for medical supplies, to go look out for some food and stuff, to leave here and bring some stuff back. Even though they have food, they got to be careful what they eat. Because, like, if these crows are pecking at the crossed and you eat enough of that meat, you become the crossed. So it's like you can't. You got to eat fish in small supplies and cook it really well, because if the mackerel are chewing on the dead body in the water, you could become infected. So you got to like watch what you eat. They have a lot of sheep, so they can eat sheep and stuff like that. They don't have any beef. I mean, one time there's a cow in a boat. That was weird. I didn't understand that.
I can't remember what they did with the cow on the boat.
The cow just blew up.
Like, oh, yeah, the cow with the grenade in.
Yeah, and its butt or something. So, yeah, it was really weird. But they have these guys that are, like, very vengeful, and they want to go out on this lottery. But the two guys that are running the lottery know that they can't lose the people that are more valuable to the culture. In other words, they provide some kind of function, protection, or food gathering, or whatever.
Yeah,
and they do not want to lose their strength. So their lottery is kind of already biased. Like, they're already...
Yeah, you know they're not going to get rid of the best guys they need to keep.
Right. So this writer guy knows...
He knows it's going to be fixed.
He knows it's going to be fixed. And it's really weird because...
Give away the twist.
You don't want to give the twist away.
No, it's a good twist.
Yeah, it is it's a slight good twist. It was unexpected.
Yeah.
Because they lead you one way and then they change their mind. But there is a lottery. There's also some weird stuff, like there's an Indian family that loses their kid. Because he was eating crow meat. Is that what they let him go?
He's playing with the crows.
And he's got a daughter that's real flirtatious, like she's 15. And she falls in love with one of the soldiers, and the soldier has a crappy death. I didn't quite understand what the little boy left a can on the the barbed wire or something, and it was rattling and causing the cross to hear it. Is that what happened?
Something like that. I don't remember exactly.
And that soldier had to go disable it, and he got caught in the barbed wire and ended up getting killed by the cross.
Oh, I think it was they have bells on the watchtowers. So when there's cross, they signal with the bells. Like a certain number of rings means a certain thing.
And they didn't fasten it.
Yeah, they got to fasten it because otherwise it'll swing in the wind when they're not there. So.
So the one professor dude, he's like, let's make the kid do it, because he didn't want the soldier to do it because he was a veteran from Afghanistan. And
they didn't want to lose him.
Didn't want to lose him because he was one of their best soldiers. And I don't know. This is a really unusual. It was pretty dense. It took me a while to read.
Yeah, it took forever.
I think it read it in an hour and maybe in 15 minutes. With a little bit of a break in the middle. But it tells his backstory. Like, he's like one of the only guys that survived and hooked up with this weird dude that kind of taught him the rules of survival. But the way it ends is there's a crazy suicide in here. There's one deaf girl that's kind of used for, I guess she's used for sex within their culture. They pay her with pebbles, which I didn't understand. And then she'd have sex with them, but I didn't understand that.
I think she's like lost her mind, kind of, and for some reason these pebbles she likes collecting them. So to her, this is the most important thing in the world.
Yeah, but why did she kill her? Why did she go watch the Aurora Borealis and slit her wrist? Like, I knew her life was shit, but.
I don't know. It was after seeing that one kid
get sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had eaten the fish and he got basically the cross. And then that guy used that cross to try to. I don't want to give away. I don't know how much I can say without. But he was trying to get out of the lottery, let's just say.
Yeah. Yeah, so one thing I like about this is there's like a huge cast in this book, and you get to see like how each of the people are handling this world and their relationships on this little island that they're all trapped on, basically. And it's the entire story is narrated by the writer's journal. So he's talking about how he feels. And there's actually some really interesting things in his journal, the way he looks at things and is analyzing human nature, really. Which, I don't know, it was pretty deep, some of the stuff he was saying.
Yeah.
Which, deeper than I've seen in other books of this nature. Like, rarely do I see a real serious look at the psychological effects of what it would be like to be in a world like this.
Yeah.
Because some of the stuff he's doing is, like, stuff that he would never do in real life, but he has to do just because he's in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And he's conflicted about some of the stuff he's doing, too.
I will say that, given the twist and all, and the way this he was documenting the story, I still don't think I know where he's coming from. I still have a question at the end of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's something he's wanting to do, and I don't know what it is yet.
Right. It's also cool. There's like flashback. Yeah. There's like flashbacks at parts of it where he's telling his story of how he got to the island, which is pretty interesting, and how he got there. And then there's the one crazy dude there's this crazy guy who occasionally comes to the island bringing like food or weapons, but he won't stay on the island with them. He just goes off again afterwards.
Yeah, and I have a real hard time reading his dialect because.
That's 'cause he's heavy Scottish or Gaelic.
Heavy Scottish or something, but it's written like that. And there's a crossed annual that you said to read. And I couldn't. It's written by the same writer as this webcomic, Simon Spurrier, and I couldn't read it because the entire comic was written like that. Even the dialogue bot, but you know
why it was written like that.
It's the same guy, isn't it? It's the
same guy, yeah.
here's my flaw: is I read that story first before I read this, and yeah. I was lost. I really was. And then I couldn't get through it because maybe it was just the frame of mind I was in, but my brain could not absorb that dialect. I even tried to read it out loud. Barb was like, brutal. What the fuck are you – what are you fucking saying? I was talking in an accent trying to understand it. And then I got exhausted. I was exhausted. I read about 20 pages of the annual. I was so exhausted that I said, fuck this. I shouldn't get exhausted reading this. And I still wasn't fucking understanding it. But now I kind of see a little bit about the character because he's one of the characters in this.
Right.
What is the accent supposed to be?
It's Scottish.
Oh.
Here, I'm trying to flip through it to find a good...
The annual, it's worse, though, I think.
Well, the problem is, so in Wish You Were Here, it kind of works because it's just his dialogue. So, and he doesn't have tons of dialogue. But when you get his dialogue once in a while... Because he's only in the book at a couple parts, because he only comes there at certain times and then leaves. So you're reading it in small chunks where it's okay. The problem with the Crossed Annual is they took that character and have him... The whole book is from his perspective, so all the narration is him. So it's all in this dialect that's goddamn impossible to understand.
I thought you would get through it.
I got through it.
I thought you would... understand it a little bit better than me just because of the nature of you reading
it's hard.
but I literally struggled. Like, I read 20 pages in and I was just exhausted. I was like, oh my god, I gotta read something else. I gotta go read some Batwing or something to get this out of. I didn't finish it. I just couldn't do it.
You might like it better now that you know who the character is, because I think it works better. And there's actually another character in this from Wish You Were Here.
Yeah, I think I might go revisit it, but it, like you said, in small chunks, it's not so bad, but when it's the whole book is written like it was really hard.
Here we go. Fucking Brass felt we was too jacked up on all we'd seen to be much use in peacetime, so they buried us in the arse end of a nowhere.
I love your accent.
Yeah, I didn't, that's with.
Okay.
San's accent.
Jesus.
Hey, what's the Scottish accent sound like?
I don't think so.
No.
Oh, and there's another character they introduced in here that I thought was interesting. The artist, the female artist, she's kind of like left alone doing her own thing, but it seems like he's falling in love with her, actually. And it, even though it's crazy and vile, there's not, this is to me a little, it's kind of tamed for a cross book. I don't know if they did it on purpose because it's a web comic, but
except for that one part with the nun, holy majoli.
Oh, that nun one was bad. Holy crap. When she's in the boat?
Yeah.
Holy, yeah, that's bad.
That was, I saw that. I'm like, whoa, that's on the website. That's a woo.
The dolphin one was kind of disturbing, and the cow thing was kind of disturbing.
Yeah, there's some disturbing stuff, but it's not a constant onslaught of disgusting stuff.
And then in the back, it's really interesting because he like created the characters before he created the story, and he like profiled what each character is, and all that's there, plus the map of the island. That was kind of neat. And then he had a little, I guess, two pages of a couple paragraphs that he wrote of why he did it the way he did it and why it's a little different than the other cross books. So, yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, I did too. I thought it was one of my favorite cross so far, I think.
When you told me you had read it, I was like, do I want to read this? Because I had tried the annual. And remember I've told you I haven't liked Simon Spurrier?
Yeah, I know you.
So I was already like,
I like him.
And I didn't like him. I read the annual, didn't get through it. And then I was like, oh god. But then I read like four or five pages and I said, "Well, I can understand it. Okay? I'm understanding the story. I don't have this weird accent."
Yeah.
And then the further I got in the story, the more addicted to it I got, cuz it is kind of like a slow burn for a cross book.
Yeah. It's also interesting because it was serialized on the web, it's told like in like 9-page chapters or 10-page chapters.
Yeah. Sasquatch. How they...
I also like the when they show his like where he started, because he was in London, like in the city when it started. So it was cool to see like the scenes of what London was like and him trying to get out of there alive.
Yeah, I like that guy that's pooping off the statue. That was funny.
I know exactly the guy you mean.
I was like, he's just sitting there shitting off the tower. It's pretty insane. It's interesting that they... I'm curious to go to the website now just to see a couple of panels, not to read it or anything, because I don't want to be spoiled for the next trade, but just to see if I have to validate my age or how they do it. You know what I mean? Because if a teenager gets this, oh my God. This is not a book you want your teenager to be reading.
I don't know how they... I don't know. Does anyone actually age check anymore?
I think it's rated X, though. Like, with its... It could even be worse than X. Is there worse than X? But because there's... you're mixing violence with disgusting stuff. So it's... I don't know how they could do it.
He shot one guy's dick off.
Yeah.
Fantastic. It's really good.
Yeah, it's a weird little culture, these characters. And the interesting thing is they only lost a couple of them.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. They have this... The system they have set up is actually really good. I mean, the island's pretty well protected.
Yeah.
As long as they get a constant flow of ammunition to ward off any, but, and the other thing is, so by the island, the channel in front of the island is really strong. So sometimes the crust just end up drowning out there.
Yeah.
So they can't get to the island. Cause the only way to come over is by boat. So it's only the crust who manage to get a boat and try to come across that are able to make it.
Yeah. They usually have fun on those boats too.
The party boats.
Yeah. I have a few others. I read Donatello Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle one shot. Color Classics from IDW. The only reason I bought this, this is one of the original series, you know, done by the creators Eastman and Laird. And it was in black and white originally. Mm-hmm. Is because it's a Kirby issue. It's paying tribute to Jack Kirby. So there's all kind. It actually has. It's a story of where Donatello meets one of their. I guess they're in a house or building with the Ninja Turtles with this artist called Kirby. And he finds this magic crystal that allows him to draw creatures and stuff, and they actually become real. And it's a pretty cool story. And there are some Kirby-esque creatures in it that, especially the splash panel, that really got me. But I liked it. It is a cool story.
I'll have to go back and check that out because I read it like when it first came out, but not since then. That was before I really knew who Kirby was, so.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It would be nice to see it in black and white, too. This one is color. They're adapting a lot of their black and white and color. Mm-hmm. But essentially anything he draws, when he meets Donatello, he shows him the pencil, and Donatello draws a stick figure, and it becomes alive. And then they have this weird... There's this weird mirror that he drew, and inside, if you go through that portal... You actually see all the creatures that he created. That's where they live, and they're attacking these like Neanderthals that are like they look like little commandees or and he has the power to draw stuff. So like when Donatello was using his staff and it wasn't working too good on the creatures, he drew in a gun real quick, and then Donatello had a gun, and it was pretty cool. It was a cool little one shot. The only reason I noticed it is because somebody on Twitter said, "Have you checked out that Kirby Ninja Turtles?" And this was before it was solicited. He said they're going to reprint it, and then so I knew to pre-order it. That was pretty pretty good story. And then I finished another dollar book that came out with Shrugged 2. I haven't read this before, so I'm like coming in this, but it's like only a buck, 10 for 10 Aspen book. And the premise of this is it's like a high school student in a fantasy. He's got some relationship to a fantasy world, which I don't know what it is because I didn't read the first series. But he's got like a devil on one shoulder and an angel on the other shoulder, and they're constantly bickering. And it was really well written, and it was good, but it wasn't for me, so I'm not going to continue with that particular dollar issue. But it was well worth a buck, I'll tell you that. And a lot of people would probably like it. If you're more into fantasy, and I guess a devil on one shoulder and an angel on the other shoulder. What else? Got caught up in Exo Man of War, which was pretty damn awesome. It's the prelude to the planet Death. It's very different from the old universe, but it's very cool because of it. It's like continuity building, and these spider aliens and the religion is more pronounced, I think, in this series. I have to go revisit the old one. But they don't want to. Half of the faction of the spider aliens don't want to destroy the armor because it's a religious artifact, and they believe it's like whoever wears it is the new messiah. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of the aliens, they want to destroy it. And there's a crossover in there with Ninjak, which was cool because Ninjak is hired by the spider aliens to destroy Arak, and that didn't work out too well. Although he could have done it. It was when he was transporting Arak, and there's one spider alien that's I don't know if he's got a hidden agenda or what, but he seems to be helping Arak. Like, he doesn't want Earth destroyed, and that's what they're going to do, destroy Earth. He's been on Earth forever. It's like they planted these spider aliens there, and he's got a human form, and he doesn't want what he grew up in destroyed for whatever reason, but he seems to be his ally. But Exo Man of War continues to be awesome. Harbinger continues to be really good. I like the way they portray Faith. She's portrayed like the old series where Faith is huge. Like, she's this real hefty girl that socializes through internet and stuff. And Peter awakens her ability for flight. And it seems like she has the ability to control gravity somewhat. They introduce Flamingo, which is the fire-based female. And if I remember in the old series, I think she was a stripper too, but I don't remember. And that's really good. So Valiant continues to be one of the better companies. And last but not least, I got caught up in Youngblood. And I don't know why I read this. There's an aspect of it that keeps me interested, but I read like six issues. I'm gonna continue with it because there's like an underlying thing I want to see resolved. But
who's doing that?
It started off with McLaughlin, who I don't know. John McLaughlin, and the art is by John Mallon. And if you look at John Mallon's art, it's very much like Rob Liefeld art is today. Not like it used to be in the Marvel, but the way it is today. Like if you looked at Deathstroke covers or Hawkman covers, there's not as much detail as Liefeld used to have, and it's, you see the lines, you know. It's an okay style. But this isn't like a, I guess like when he released Glory and Supreme and some of the other books, he was looking more for like an independent feel, like, I don't know, like these character building. Whereas with the Youngblood title, he wanted to maintain the status quo. So it's very much like 90s Youngblood. And they just recently bought Bad Rock back, who's probably one of the main Youngblood, you know, Shaft and Bad Rock. And they have this ongoing joke because Shaft left for the FBI and they have this other guy that's Shaft, but he's like non-Shaft, they call him. And that's kind of annoying.
I always like Bad Rock.
Yeah, Bad Rock. The Bad Rock story is pretty cool, and I want to see how that's panned out. Plus, they have Vogue, which is one of the females that's on there, and she's got this storyline where that the old Shaft is like finding her body dead in various locations in different points of time, and that's the underlying story. I want to see how that pans out. Other than that, I would just kind of avoid it. Rob Liefeld took over the writing chores for McLaughlin, I think in 76 or 77, and I preferred the other guy. But I also read Son of Merlin too, and that is still really good. I'm digging it.
Oh, cool.
I'm glad I jumped onto this. Anytime they have like a dollar book, I'm gonna get it because a lot of them are really panning out to be good. And one other thing I want to mention, finally read Godstorm, which is the Zenoscope book involving Zeus and Neptune and Venus and I guess Zeus's son. Mm-hmm. That really, really was good. Yeah. I even Twittered Pat Shand, who writes it, and is, are you guys going to continue with it? This was the series that was really weird that I told you. It's very hard to follow because it was like part of the story was in the annual, part of it was in Grimm Universe, and you know, part of it was in this title. Really awkward to follow as a fan, not reading the solicitations.
What are they thinking when they do that?
I have no idea, but but it read really well. You know, having read all of them.
Once you figured out what order
to read it in. Yeah, it was pretty damn awesome. And I always liked Greek mythology, and I like how they portrayed Zeus and Zeus's son. Venus is trying to start a war on Earth amongst the gods and destroy Earth. And she's manipulating Zeus's son to try to get what she wants, and it was a good story. That story and the Robin Hood story, the Grimm Fairy Tales Robin Hood, I enjoyed quite a bit.
Is that a female Robin Hood?
Yeah. Robin. It's by the same writer. Maybe that's why I'm enjoying it. Pat Shan did both.
Huh. That's probably...
Yeah.
Probably it. I don't know if I have... I don't think I have any of the God ones, but I think I might have a Robin Hood one. To check. I'm never sure about those Xenoscope because there's some good and some terrible.
Yeah, the last episode I talked about one that was terrible, so you kind of don't know.
Usually, like the Grimm Fairy Tales proper ones, but
yeah, Grimm Fairy Tales proper is awesome. I haven't liked the Alice in Wonderland, but I blame the fact that I never read Alice in Wonderland. And I don't understand Alice in Wonderland. So maybe if I understood the world and or seen a movie, I haven't even seen like the cartoon or the movie that they remade, the live action one. So I don't even know the tale of Alice in Wonderland, although I know the characters just because you see them so many times. The Mad Hatter and Alice and the Rabbit. Tweedledee and Tweedledum, but I know I'm mostly from Batman.
I'm going to see a musical for kids, Alice in Wonderland, in the next couple months. So I'll learn all about that stuff. I'm sure it's good. Those are the ones, they do it for, it's for kids, so it's only like an hour long.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
Yeah, it's perfect. My son always wants to go, so. Alice in Wonderland. It's always interesting to see how they do the makeup and stuff for the more interesting characters. We're trying to figure out how they're going to do the rabbit and a cat.
Someone in a rabbit suit.
Yep. That should be funny. So what, Mike, you said you emailed the guy or you Twittered?
Yeah, I Twittered him and he said, no, they're not. The characters will appear like in another as side characters, you know, in the like their next event, but they're not going to be like in their own tale, and that's kind of where I wanted to see them, you know.
Mm-hmm. So did this one complete the Godland?
Yeah, I completed. It was 4 issues. Well, no, I think it's 5 issues. Had a 0 issue.
Okay.
I thought it was pretty cool. But it kind of leaves it open-ended, too. Like, I mean, it does have a conclusion, but there's still, like, an open-ended thing that you can run with, and that's why I tweeted him. I was like, is there another second part to this? And he said no. And then the Superman Hell on Earth ended pretty cool. I'll just say that. I liked it. It was a good event. Especially for the Superboy title. Superboy was meandering where he couldn't really get the character or anything, and then finally I think he hopefully they do something with it after the ramifications of this book. And it had a good ending. It had a payoff, at least I thought it did, that could impact the new 52 Superman. And it has a weird thing going on in the background. I have no idea what they're trying to do, but it has like this herald of, it has like a Galactus and Silver Surfer thing going on. And I have no idea where they're going with it, because it appeared in every comic, but they didn't really explain anything about it.
Hinting at it?
Yeah, they're hinting at it. It's bizarre as all hell. I look forward to seeing where they're going with it. Because the being was trying to communicate with Superman, and Superman's like, I got no time for this. Hell is trying to destroy the Earth. And the other thing that was cool is 3 different writers got to handle Wonder Woman, and man, did they do a good job. Because the Justice League was all in this crossover too, so they did a good job characterizing Wonder Woman and the fight scene between her and Supergirl. Man, she's just badass. You got anything, Bill?
Yeah. I'm looking through my comics now because I saw that Patrick Strand guy wrote Slipstream.
That one wasn't good. Sorry.
From and I read that, but I can't remember what I thought of it. I think I liked it.
No. Look, thumb through it. It's kind of it was very mediocre.
Which one was that? That's from Dog Inc. Right?
Big Dog Inc. I think that's Pat Shen's first Big Dog Inc. work, and they had like this crossover. It's written in the title of it. It's called Electric Youth or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they had it was a bunch of one shots that had a very, very light tie to the Critter book. And it featured some characters that were in Critter or had been featured. I read Critter monthly, so I know this. But of the 4 that they featured, one of them was called Rookie, Slipstream, Electric Youth, and I forget what the 4th one was. But that one, Slipstream was my least favorite.
Least favorite of all of them.
And
I found it. Slipstream.
I thought it was going to be my most favorite because I had read at least 10 or 12 stories from Pat Shand, and I liked his style.
So you're all excited about it.
And maybe that's why I was let down. I don't know.
I like the art. I remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, this one wasn't that great. It was okay. I didn't hate it.
I didn't hate it. It fell into my, like, 3 of 5 where I liked it, but when you fall into the 3 of 5, unless it's something that I'm interested in, some ongoing plot, I could probably drop, you know?
Yeah. I haven't really... I've read some Big Dog Inc. books, but I really haven't found one yet that has really clicked with me 100%.
The one that the universe I like is Penny for Your Soul. I like it a lot.
Let me try that one.
And I'll be real interested in seeing what you think of Phantom Stranger now that you have number 6, because I really, that's my favorite DC book right now. It is so awesome what they're doing with heaven and hell to me. Like, he's actually Judas in this incarnation. So, and then you have the Spirit of Vengeance, the Spectre, and all the other characters, the demons of, you know, Trigon and all that. It's, I really like what they're doing.
Cool. I'll have to check it out. I have one more thing that I read. I read the Hypernaturals trade volume 1, which collects 0 through 3 of Hypernaturals. And I started reading it, and I didn't really care for issue 0, which I'd read before. But then I liked number 1, and I liked 2, and I liked 3, so I'm back on board. So this is the tale that is by Abnett and Lanning, and it takes place in some distant future where it appears that a computer became self-aware and made itself kind of into a god and controls what they call the Q network or something like that, which enables people, which is basically the communication system that everyone uses, and it also allows for teleportation. So using this Q link, you can get transferred from one place to another, and it seems to be run by this, I can't remember what they call the overall computer that runs everything. But anyway, the Q, maybe they just call it the Q, I don't remember. So the story starts out where, and in this society they have the Hypernaturals, which are people who are in this world, people are born with gifts where they have kind of these powers, and if you're a level 3 or above, you can try out to be on this Hypernaturals team, which are the superhero team that helps the universe or whatever, protects the Q universe. So it starts out, this new team has just made it to, oh, and you serve a term. So I think you serve a 5-year term, and you're allowed to serve up to 3 terms as a Hypernatural before you have to retire. So there's the new team, the 100th team in existence, and it starts out where they go to, there's some disturbance where they're not hearing back from people who live on this one planet somewhere, so they go to investigate, and then they lose contact with them, so they're freaking out trying to figure out what the heck's going on and how they can reestablish communication with them and find out what happened to them, and the story goes on from there, and they have to bring in past Hypernaturals to investigate. They bring in past Hypernaturals and then some people who, 2 kids who almost made the cut to be on the Hypernaturals team but didn't. So they bring them up to be on this team now. It's really interesting, I think. It's an interesting story. Oh, the other thing is they find out that all of this is being caused by, was intentional, being caused by some bad guy who they don't know who he is, but he has the same patterns as a bad guy who they faced in the past, who, and I don't remember the bad guy's name, but it's a bad guy who they captured, and he's actually in this weird prison they developed just for him, where I think it's like in one of the, it's in Saturn's orbit, like in one of the radiation fields, and it's like floating there, and they have him on a thing basically where there's no technology, there's no modern technology, so because he can control technology, so he's kept in this prison where there's no technology, and he's up like hanging in this cage by a chain, like in the middle of this room, and if he tried to escape it, it'll drop the cage through the floor and out into outer space, and he'll die. So they know it's not him that's doing it, but they kind of like a Silence of the Lambs types thing. They go to him to try and figure out, to get clues on who the bad guy is who's doing this and how to catch him. So it's really interesting. I like it.
I think I fell into the same boat you did, where I thought the I think it was a Free Comic Book Day, Hypernaturals number 0.
Yeah,
I didn't like it well enough to add it, but I do have it on my like want list because I know Abnett Landing are one of those writers that the bigger part of the story is big, you know, better if you read a lot of their stuff. So I put it on my wish list on Amazon. I have gift certificates and I just haven't decided. I'm really struggling with, do I go get something old or do I get some stuff new that I haven't read? And I'm trying to decide.
Well, this is good because it combines the sci-fi with the superheroes.
I didn't like the price point of it, though. It's like $16.99 for 4 issues.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that's kind of holding me back a little bit.
Yeah, although it's pretty... I mean, it's size-wise, it's about the same size as any other trade. There's a lot here. I mean, it takes a while to read through it. There's a lot of text. And there's a lot of things you have to actually have to think about to figure out.
Yeah,
and I
they were. I was just taking Harley for a walk, and I listened to the comic book page pretty religiously. And damn you, Bill, for finding something in previews that I didn't find. I missed that Matt Kent book.
Damn you!
I was like, it's like one of my most expensive orders, and I thought I had like, I had read it in the bathroom like at least 25 times. I had my list ready, and then there's this Matt Kent book from First Second. I'm like, shit. But they were talking about trade sales, and Hypernaturals was listed in the bottom there as selling like 700 copies in trade, 780 really? Copies. I guess that's fairly decent, but for Boom. Mm-hmm. But the other thing interesting they mentioned is they're trying to plot like where it's sold on the monthlies, and it's not even in the top 300. Like it's not even charting. So that book's not doing too good. I heard the last issue is 12 too.
Yeah, I could see this being a close-ended one. So there'll be 3 trades then.
Yeah, probably.
It's a good story. I like, they have a lot of character stuff too, where the woman who is running the Hypernaturals, she's like the public relations person for the Hypernaturals, was a former member of the team, and she's currently dating one of the guys who's on the current team who went missing, but she was married to one of the guys on a past team who was like a big hero. He was a big hero when he was, he's a clone. He's like clone 45, and he was like a big hero when he was on the team, very popular in the populace. But I guess these clones, that once there's a new clone, then the last clone loses their superpowers. So he doesn't have his powers anymore, and he's an alcoholic now. And then there's another guy who's really smart. He's like a mathematician, and he's now a professor at a university. And they bring him in. And then the two kids that they brought back on the team, one of them, he has this weird power where he makes these particles, and then the particles can go into things and like manipulate them. And the girl on the team, and then one of them's a girl who, she has an attitude problem, but she doesn't like to listen to authority, and she thinks the world's against her. So she's a real interesting character too. I don't know. I like it. I really enjoyed it. I recommend it.
Yeah, I'll check it out. If I have a choice, though, I'd rather get that other trade from Boom, that Superbia Volume 1, because I know I like Volume 2 because I'm reading it.
Yeah.
Like, and I want to know more about that. So, and I also want to read Revival, like from Image. That's another one that I'm putting on the list.
I read number 1 and I wasn't crazy about it. I think I might have picked up number 2 yesterday.
Mm. Was somebody there for it or what?
No, just from a dealer.
Cool. We have a few questions. I thought we could finish them. This other question is the only reason I did Sullivan Sluggers really early because, you know, we were already talking about it. But we have, if you can pick only one Justice League comic to follow, Justice League of America, or Justice League Dark, which one would it be? For me, it'd be, I don't know. You don't read it. Both of you don't read it, so I don't think I don't think you could.
Choose one, what?
If one you could those... pick one title that you would read, I guess you could answer that. Which one would you read?
Justice League and Justice League of America.
Justice League is like your big time group. You know, your Superman.
I read Justice League of America when it sucked.
Justice League of, I didn't think it sucked.
Sucked.
Justice League of America. Justice League of America.
Characters, the flashbacks of these characters. No story. Boo.
No, there is a story. It showed the formation of the team with the man.
That's
of story.
Let's set up. It's all set up. Boo.
We know
I would read that one. I would read that one.
For me, I think it would be, God, if I could only pick one, I'd pick Justice League just to stay current on the main team, which is a bad answer. If I want the best book that I like to read the most, it's Justice League Dark.
That's what I would pick.
Because it's by far, yeah, Jeff Lemire is killing it in that book. Like he's writing a really cool story, and the way that he's tying all of the like mysterious characters and magic characters is pretty damn awesome. So yeah, best read is Justice League Dark, but if I have to pick one to stay current on, I think I'd pick Justice League. That's not a good answer.
If I was going to read one, I'd probably read Dark.
Yeah.
Sounds the most interesting.
Yeah, I think if you were to pick one, you guys would like Dark. But Dark is one that I firmly believe you have to jump in at the right point. Because it's not like something you could just pick up and enjoy because there's an ongoing storyline that you guys need to read to get the full picture, which isn't for a monthly comic, but it is good for an overall story. So there's that question, and then we got a few more on Facebook. So
sweet.
Find it.
I like questions.
If I didn't post all these pictures of Poison Ivy, I'd be able to find it quicker.
Some days I go on Facebook and I have to just scroll past pictures of all these naked women to find stuff.
The problem is you're scrolling past them. You're supposed to stop.
That's my flaw.
Yeah. If I had a crossed guy with his penis hanging out, Bill would be like, whoa, I got to stop.
Occasionally I stop. There's been a couple Wonder Woman that have been stop worthy.
So this one is, what is, this is from John Carroll. He just asked, what is the square root of stupid?
John Carroll.
Yeah. You met John Carroll at Heroes, I believe.
Mm.
What is the square root of stupid? I don't 7. Know. What is it, Barb? She's just laughing. That could be a good t-shirt. What is the square root of stupid logo? Alan says, ask Bill where he comes from. I don't know if I remember him ever explaining it. Where do you come from? Well, are you, what planet?
He explained it.
I'm from the Q zone.
Quebec.
I've been sent back to your time. Where am I from?
Yeah, I know you're from Canada, right?
Yeah, I was born in Illinois, and then when I was 3, we moved up to Canada.
How long were you there?
13 years.
Ah.
So I did all my grade school and high school in Canada, and we were just outside of, well, 45 minutes outside of Toronto.
Is Toronto? I know a lot of people from Canada, and some of them are French Canadian, and some of them are not. Mm-hmm. Outside of Toronto, where is what is that primarily?
What
Is it English or French?
The only French is
Quebec. It's like a lot Quebec. Of French, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Quebec's from they're French and then English, and the rest of the country is English and then French. Mm. So I believe French is the second second language, or they're bilingual. So everything, all packaging in Canada has English and French on it. But most people, I mean, when I grew up, we took French in school, but that's pretty much the extent of the French.
Qu'est-ce que c'est?
Right.
Avec moi. No, I took French, but I don't know anything. High school.
I don't really know any French.
We had to take French.
I don't know why I took French, because I think it was because all the cool people took French.
What were your choices? French?
Practically, for practice, I must rather learn Spanish, just because it would be more value to me where I was in New Mexico. but then I could decipher what grandma was saying. But
I was going to say, like, you had every reason to take Spanish.
every reason, and even now it would be helpful, because Colorado, you anywhere you go, like at least on the California or Colorado, like Pueblo's a real Hispanic oriented culture. It would be value to me to know some stuff, but I took French. I don't know. I think it's because of the teacher too. I still have her. I'm friends with her on Facebook. My favorite teacher of all time. Mimi Adelson, man. I loved her. I had her for English and French. And she was not only a teacher, but she was a good friend. So,
mm-hmm. Wink, wink. I know where you're going. See where you're going with that.
So,
special. She was a special friend.
Yes.
She taught me things.
Actually, Barb and I were both, what would you call it, student aides for her? Like, yeah, we'd grade papers and stuff. So,
that's what the kids called back then, huh?
Yeah, me and Barb would grade some papers in the back.
She taught Barb and I how to grade papers.
Yeah. So, Chris Ivy asks, do Micah and Bill love any creators the way Mike loves Kirby? Or at least approaching how Mike loves Kirby?
I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. Approaching your Kirby love?
Probably not.
I don't think I have one specific one. I mean, I have, like, my favorites. My favorite creators, but that I have, like, all their stuff. But
which is one of your closest that you could say, like, hey,
like,
I have...
Mine's McDuffie, but, like...
Uh-huh. Dwayne McDuffie?
Yeah.
In more ways than just... I guess you could say in more ways than comics.
Yep.
Because the guy was a madman in animation, too.
Mm-hmm. So I have most of everything he did in comics.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. Like, even stuff I didn't even realize was him at first. And some stuff that isn't that good at all. Like Double Dragon. And, that's really not good. Like, it's surprisingly not good, but he was working with nothing, so I give all those big name creators who end up working on those licensing books back in the 80s a lot of slack. Because a lot of it is weird stuff. But, like, yeah. It is a lot of books.
Man, I'm trying to...
I really like Matt Kent and Jeff Lemire a lot, and Eric Powell. I mean, those...
And Tom Scioli.
Tom Scioli and David Laugham. So I have my, like, list of...
Yeah.
Like, they're like my go-to, like... They're, like, when Bill mentioned I was missing a Matt Kent book, which I never even heard of, I was like, what the hell? How did I miss that?
They snuck that one in.
But I don't look at first, second too much in detail, so...
Yeah, that one, it got by me the first time, too. I only noticed it because I thought the description was interesting, and then it was only after that that I noticed it was a Matt Kent book.
Yeah, and we're both supporting that new launch of that Steve Niles company and the rapper. So
you know, Steve Niles, I like him.
There's a lot of interesting... Yeah, Steve Niles, I would say that I will buy everything that he does... But I don't hold him on the pedestal that I do some of those other creators. Like those ones, like I have to have. Like,
yeah, I can see that.
But if I could have one creator that I could continue to explore, like I even got a new hardcover yesterday called Spirit World, and it's a Jack Kirby horror hardcover where it collects some of his horror books, and I freaking love Jack. Like, I could sit there and look at Jack Kirby art like all day, and I'm not the art guy. I am not the guy to analyze.
I hate pictures.
No, when I read mostly for story, but his art just like He-Man. I'm buying He-Man for Christ's sake because. Giffen is doing that. I normally buy He-Man just for shits, but I saw that it's Giffen, and I'm excited about it. Like when he's doing Legion and stuff, it's like that art really appeals to me. And I just wanted to say the other book that you mentioned, I think a couple weeks ago, Bill, that was 5 out of 5 for me. Another Image book was Todd and the Ugliest Kid on Earth. Oh my god. That was so fantastic. Shit. The art in there is just absolutely spectacular. And the story is so bizarre and up my alley that I absolutely loved it. So Image is pumping them out with 5 weapons and Todd.
That one's good because it's got the crime side of it, and then it's got the humor.
Yeah.
It's got the weirdness.
And a very likable character, like
yeah, the cool main character
you care for. I am so upset I didn't jump on that when it was a comic because I know I would have enjoyed it even more on paper. It's just psychological thing I have.
Just do what I do. Just get all the Image number ones of the new stuff they bring out.
I think that's
can't really go wrong
because you either like it or you don't. And then
you don't like it, you're not out that much money
list. Yeah. And then half of them you could just resell for...
Right, you could just resell if you didn't like it.
Because they're worth something because they only print like 2 copies, so... All right.
That's always best strategy.
Do you have any names that you want to mention, Bill, in particular? Like the guy who does the Black Sad, wouldn't you say he's one?
Not really. I just like Black Sad.
Oh, okay. Really. Tezuka? I mean, wouldn't he
I would say Tezuka for sure is one. Dan Brereton's another. Ross Campbell.
Stoke.
Like, those guys, I get all their stuff. Well, Tezuka, I get most of his stuff. He just has too much stuff.
Did you say Stoke?
Tezuka is probably like my Kirby for me since like he's not doing anything new, but there's always new stuff popping up that I don't have.
Yeah, reprints. So. And they're exploring his... Everything he's ever published.
I'm trying to figure out like, how much of it there is. Because every time you look around, there's something new coming out. You're like, I didn't even know he did that.
Got a lot. A lot.
Yeah.
But I have I have so much of his stuff. So, I mean, I'd like to have it all.
I don't know. I don't want to be buried underneath just a mountain of Tezuka books.
And Brian Rosenberger... It was Bruce Rosenberger's brother. He said, talk about the dungeon role-playing game Kickstarter.
The what? Tell
everybody to back it. I don't even like Dungeons & Dragons. I'm sorry. This is who you need to talk to.
I have no idea what's going on.
If we had Keith Knudsen on, he'd know what you're talking about.
I picked up a Dungeons & Dragons annual yesterday.
How did that go for you?
Cheap bin. I don't even read it yet.
Have you played Dungeons & Dragons?
I played it when I was a kid a couple times.
Did you like it?
I played a couple times.
that says you didn't really get into it. But you didn't have Knutson as a dungeon master either.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't hate it, but...
Yeah, Keith wore tight pants when he was dungeon master. And and went in there and took care of business.
I like the idea of the system of Dungeons and Dragons. I just, the idea of like finding a bunch of friends to do it, like I don't have time for that.
I don't think I have the imagination to enjoy it. I hate to say that because my whole world's based on imagination, but I don't think I have the creativity in my... Maybe that's why I don't read so many books. I don't know. I can't visualize things in my mind very well.
Hmm.
I can solve problems in my mind, like mathematical or engineering problems, but I'm not very good at... One side of your brain is, you know, the artistic side, and one's the analytical side, and I think I mostly use my analytical side, my brain. I don't have a good creative mind.
Yeah, D&D, like on paper, it's just not my thing.
Mike, you probably just die all the time because you'd just be like, attack, attack! Any situation. I run in and I attack them.
The problem is like,
it's like you have to best yourself, you can't have like an ADD thing with entertainment that I do, because it seems like it'd take forever.
Gonna be in for the long haul.
Like
that is awesome to me. Like the idea of like just sitting down for the next 3 hours and this is what you're gonna do, whatever, sounds great.
It's like just that, like podcasting.
I'm gonna hate the Dungeon Master.
This is our Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, this is
Well, like I just there's a dungeon master, and I'm gonna be like, all right, so my character's gonna go forward and do this thing, and he's like, no, you can't do that. I'm like, why not? Because this. I'm like, this is dumb. I'm just like throw the board over and walk out.
So. It really was.
There is no board. So throw the dice across the room.
Throw the dice at someone's face.
All the different size die. I did like that movie Gamers, which was like a documentary. Not documentary type movie, a mockumentary, I guess you could say it was, which is about gamer, you know, like that type of world. And I loved I Kill Monsters. Or was that what it was called?
The book about the little girl.
I Kill Giants. Yeah, the book about the little girl from Image.
That was sensational.
That was amazing, and that took place in like her world was. Invested in role playing.
Yeah, she was heavily into role playing games.
And I love subculture, and again, that is into role playing too. So
she like reading about it. You just don't like doing it.
Yeah, I don't think I even tried HeroClix one time because the figures look so cool, but I don't want it. I don't know.
The game itself is.
Gamers is on Hulu Plus.
Is it not on regular Hulu?
It looks like just Hulu Plus. I have Hulu Plus now.
Oh, see, I don't have Hulu Plus, but I have regular Hulu, and I can watch some things that aren't on Hulu Plus, and I don't understand what's going on.
I don't like it when there's stuff that's on Hulu only and not on Hulu Plus.
It just seems weird to me.
Stupid.
Because people are paying for Plus, right?
Yeah. Paying, can't watch stuff. Yeah, we
does it have to do with like it being on a TV, I guess, because they assume that people don't have their computers with the monitor.
Yeah, I think that's for some reason they don't want them watching it on the TV. I guess it's for stuff that's on actual TV. They'd rather them subscribe to their channel or whatever. Bastards.
I agree.
I was surprised that Jimmy Robinson listened to the whole episode of Geek Brunch.
I am too. I'm surprised anyone does, actually.
But the one thing I think I took it as a compliment, is he said our show is like no plan, and we're just a bunch of friends that talk about geeky shit, and that's what it is. It's like
actually correct. There is no plan.
Bill doesn't even have a stack of comics next to him to talk. He just wings it. It's like, what created? I don't know.
I'm kidding. I'm surrounded by stacks of comics.
That's the problem.
And nothing but stacks of comics.
Oh, I have another creator to add to my list. Stan Sakai. I forget about him all the time, but I've read probably more of his books than almost anyone else.
I have not read any Stan Sakai other than what he's done like in anthologies like Rocketeer and stuff. I have not read Usagi Yojimbo or any of that.
I'm a big fan of that book.
It's fantastic. This one,
and it just keeps going, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I need to find time to.
I would say Tom Beland I like a lot too, but he doesn't put anything out anymore. So, I mean, True Story, swear to God.
Is he okay?
Yeah, I think he's fine. He's always posting on Facebook, so. I know his wrist got damaged, but he's working on stuff. I just haven't seen any of it, you know.
Right.
Maybe he's doing a webcomic or something, but I haven't seen anything solicited.
He was doing those Marvel.
Yeah, a Puerto Rican Fantastic Four, or Spider-Man. Yeah, I've read that they're like one shots.
I have them in Spanish.
There you go.
I don't read Spanish, but whatever.
All right. You guys want to talk some movies? I think that's it for questions.
Okay.
Thank you for your questions.
Nothing.
Yeah. I've been doing that for all the shows, and it seems like we get a lot. You know, at least two or three questions to talk about.
Yeah. Gives you some new
questions are good.
Yeah. All right. So movies. Anybody watch any movies besides Hippie Masala? If you want to call that a movie.
If you want to call that a movie, you can, I guess.
I rewatched Bachelor Party with Tom Hanks. And it is quite enjoyable. I enjoyed it again.
Yeah, it's probably still enjoyable.
I don't know if it's totally nostalgic enjoyable, but I liked it. I thought it was still entertaining. I didn't laugh out loud. I remember when I saw that in high school at the theater, I think it was the first beaver I've ever seen on TV in a rated R because it has that one where his best friend tries to set him up with a girl he was always attracted to in high school, and she's basically in the bedroom there naked waiting for him, and he's like, he can't do it because he'd get married. But it's a crazy movie. It's a bachelor party gone wrong, and they play jokes on each other. The one scene I still found funny is they find out that his wife-to-be and his mom and or his mother-in-law and all them are going to a male strip club. And they go to crash it because their bachelor party, the strippers didn't show up. Somebody hacked their porn, so all the naked scenes were edited out.
I remember that.
So they end up going to the male strip club because one of their friends is the bartender at the male strip club. And he says, you know, your wife to be is over here with everybody. And they go over there and they have this guy with this huge dick. Like, he's one of the strippers or the Chippendales, and he's got this really big dick. They actually make a thump sound when he shows the dick to like Tom Hanks and them. It's like, whoop, boom. And they have him go serve hot dogs to everybody that's in the bachelorette party, and one of the hot dogs has his wiener in it. And
one of the buns.
Yeah, in between two buns, and the mom grabs it, and she's just like jerking on it. She's like, what is this? I can't get this hot dog out. This isn't no hot dog, and she can't let the dick go. She like doesn't let the dick go.
She wants the hot dog.
It lasts for like 2 minutes. She's like pulling on his dick, and he's just moving with it. And he keeps this serious face on his. It's hilarious.
I still remember that scene. I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
Yeah, it was on IFC. I didn't think it was an independent film, but you never know with like Cartoon Network not showing cartoons and IFC showing Bachelor Party. You never know.
Maybe it was made with the spirit of the independent movie.
I don't know. Or maybe as a creator that it is in the movie that is doing independent films. I don't know.
They'll find any excuse.
But anyway, that was very entertaining to see again. I saw It's a Good Day to Die Hard.
And?
I liked it. It was cool. Definitely. We talked about Die Hard last episode.
Mm-hmm.
And in great detail about what this one. It could be anywhere with two. Like, it's towards the bottom. Like, I might rank this one above two, like Die Hard 2.
Mm-hmm. No, sequels suck, so.
No.
as we've discovered lots of episodes.
Sequels don't suck.
Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah.
I'm not a Ghostbusters fan, but I don't remember hating Ghostbusters 2.
It's no Ghostbusters 1.
Sometimes the sequels exceeded the prequels.
Aliens, which Jimmy says is a sequel, so.
The only thing that I would say is awkward in this movie is Bruce. The whole plot of this is Bruce Willis is going to Russia to rescue his son, who he thinks is like a loser in life.
The son that we've never seen.
Yeah, son that we've never seen and who's always in trouble. And the part that is totally unbelievable about the movie is he's so out of touch with his son to not know what he's doing in life. Like, his son is in the freaking CIA. Good Lord. It seems like him being a cop and being like who he was, and if he cared, he would know that his son was in the CIA and not know that he's just getting arrested in Russia for being a juvenile delinquent. I don't know. It's just, he's not even a juvenile. He's an adult. But it's got a lot of action scenes that are pretty cool. I would recommend it just to watch, if not pay for, but watch it.
Find it somewhere.
Netflix Instant Streaming or Amazon Prime when it comes out. And just two more I'm just going to mention, but I'm not going to beat them to death because I already talked about them in DC Noises. Craigslist Joe.
That sounds terrifying.
Follows the life. It's a documentary about a guy who does an experiment. He leaves the house with a laptop, a cell phone, and the clothes off his back. And his whole objective is for 30 days to live off of Craigslist. And with a cameraman, of course, which makes some of it, I think, not as real, because I don't think some of the responses once the people meet him and they see a camera guy there are genuine. Right. Because
of course not. Shows.
They know they're going to be on film, but I think the initial approach, like him contacting them through Craigslist and saying, I need a ride from here to here, or could I have a place to sleep? I think those are genuine, but I think the way the people act once he arrives are not as genuine because they know that the camera guy is on them. But it was an interesting experiment, and it was good, and it was well worth watching. So Craigslist Joe is on Netflix. It's in streaming. That one's worth it. And then if you're a fan of porn, what is it called? After Porn Ends. It follows maybe 8 or 10 people that were porn stars when I was a kid, like when porn was like the greatest thing on earth, like what they're doing now and where they're at in life now. So it is interesting just to see what the human condition did to these people. In some aspects, they were very successful in life and they didn't mind their porn career, and they looked upon it as a good stepping stone to get them where they are today, you know, which is making money or managing things now rather than actually being the porn star. So some of them made a lot of money, and then some of them really had the sob stories where they got into it because their parents kicked them out. They had nowhere else to go. And now they turn to God and they're trying to close down the porn industry. So you go from one extreme to the other extreme. But that's also on Netflix Instant Streaming. One of the big names was Tia Carrera, which was like one of the first Asian porn stars. And her story was kind of interesting because she highly respected the porn industry. She controlled her life within the porn industry rather than her getting consumed by it, like by the drugs and all the other stuff. She controlled her career. She picked what movie she's going to be in. She made a lot of money. She met her husband, who was a director. She got out of the industry. And supposedly she has a really, really high IQ. But her sob story was her husband ended up going on some kind of tour and drove somewhere and ended up getting in a car accident and dying. So she was stuck with her kids. But there's a lot of interesting stories in there. It's interesting to see if you had ever watched any porn with these. Because today, porn is not what it was back then. Back then, you would always see the same damn actors in every porn. Because porn was like, I guess, not everybody. Now that it's gone internet and viral and all this.
Also, back then, not everyone had their own personal video camera.
Yeah, nobody had a personal video camera. It was more like you had to go to the video store to get a videotape or have somebody record something for you. But
yeah, I think back then they had probably like a couple studios that were doing it, and that's where you made the movies. You couldn't just go in your basement and record one.
Yeah, the other porn star they had is Sika, which was a big porn star in my time. The first porn I ever watched was Sika is Tara. I remember because it was my first porn. And interesting enough, now she's into like, she has like a cigar shop with her husband. She's always smoking a cigar, and she makes a lot of money just touring, you know, because she was so popular at the time.
Yeah.
She makes a ton of money just touring, and she's into plants. Like
for a while, she was a radio host in Chicago.
Yeah.
She had like a talk radio show for, I don't know how long it lasted, maybe a couple of years.
So she had pleasant memories, and then there's like the other extremes, the ones that got involved in drugs. There was this one that got involved. She's a bounty hunter now. She hunts down people. She's got a gun and everything in a family.
Do people recognize her when they're coming after her?
I don't think
they're coming after them.
I don't think there are.
Hey, hello, you.
There are some that they recognize. Like one went in to try. She got cancer and left the industry and tried to get into real estate. She became a real estate agent. And like 6 months into her job, she got discovered. People like, hey, I know you. And they fired her. But it's kind of ironic that the people that figure out who they are probably the ones that were watching the movies. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like it's a weird industry because they were looked down upon. But yet most of the people were watching them.
Yeah, you're consuming it. So. Yeah,
they're consuming it in private and then condemning the occupation. So.
Right.
I mean, it's one thing to condemn the occupation if you've never experienced it because you think it's wrong. But there's another thing if you're hiding it and you're watching it and condemning it.
Yeah,
that's not right. But yeah, well, one of these guys left the industry, and I've seen all these guys' faces before. I just can't think of them. One of these guys left the industry because his wife, in other words, he was making a lot of money and his wife was okay with it, okay? But the AIDS thing came about in the industry and his wife didn't want anything to do with him anymore. She said she didn't want to have sex with him anymore, and he basically quit the industry because he wanted to be with his wife. He basically said, I can't, if I'm not going to be able to have sex with my wife, I'm going to quit the industry. And he didn't have AIDS or anything, but, you know.
I can understand her concern.
Yeah, there was a lot of interesting characters in that movie. So, yeah. Porn. After porn ends. That wasn't my choice, believe it or not.
What was your choice?
Mine was Craigslist Joe.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that. So which was the best out of the three?
I
know which one was the worst.
I liked After Porn Ends the most. I don't know what that says about me, but I think I would have liked Craigslist Joe more, but I had a lot of problems with it. The whole concept was interesting, but I don't think it was as genuine, and it bothered me.
Yeah, that would I could see that taking you out of it.
So it was a good story. He met a lot of good people along the way, and he did stay, I think, true to his original goal. I just think that if he met a wacko, they wouldn't appear as a wacko because on Craigslist because they know they're being filmed. So, yeah, I don't know how you'd hide it unless you had a hidden camera. And then you'd have to get signatures after.
Yeah, the thing is that, like, you couldn't even beforehand with some of this stuff, you can't...
You have to get written authorization that you're going
to
be using.
You had to do some things, right?
Yeah.
So... I question exactly how real any of that is.
Yeah, that's a lot of the shows. Themselves, there's like a whole camera crew in the room with them. So it changes the dynamic when you think about it that way. But there's no real other way to do it.
Unless it's over such a prolonged time that you stop noticing that the camera's there and it brings out the true jackass. No, I don't know.
I'm sure there's some people who can ignore that.
Yeah, you probably
do get used to it after a while. Although you're never going to completely forget about it.
I'm actually finding Netflix more interesting in the documentary area.
Well, all these sites are way more rich in the documentary just because they can get the rights to those easier.
Yeah, those are a lot cheaper to get the rights.
There's just a lot of. Wealth there. Like, I've been reading a ton of comics lately about concentration camps. And I remember watching a lot of documentaries when I was a kid and watching Anne Frank and watching the Holocaust, which I don't even know how to find that one movie. There was a movie back when I was a kid called Holocaust. It appeared on like Primetime at the time. And it was like Roots. Do you know what I mean? It was like a long ass movie, and I don't even know how to find it. But I'd like to revisit that again because it was when I was a kid and I saw it. I was like, "Holy crap!"
Yeah, but I remember. I don't know if I saw
next,
that one before.
The next documentary I'm going to try is Auschwitz, or you know that there's a documentary on Netflix, just to see a little bit more of what those concentration camps and stuff were like.
What did they call that? Did they call it a miniseries back in the day? I think so.
I don't know. I remember watching Roots, which was a long miniseries. I remember watching this one, Holocaust.
Was it with Meryl Streep and James Woods?
It might have been.
1978. It's on DVD.
Does it say the hour time on it?
No, no.
The play time?
It's three discs.
Okay, so maybe it was that. Because I remember it being like a weekly thing. Like
it's 475 minutes.
Yeah. That's probably it. Meryl Streep and Woods, huh?
9.5 hours.
That sounds about right. That sounds about right.
I think I might have seen that when I was in school.
Is it on Netflix, Holocaust?
I don't know.
I mean, I know it's not on instant streaming because I already looked.
Oh, you mean the discs?
Yeah, I was just wondering if the discs were on there. You don't have instant streaming anymore from Netflix.
I don't have Netflix anymore. I didn't watch any movies, I don't think.
Nope, same here.
Yeah, it is on Netflix. I think that is it. I'm looking at the cover to it right now.
I don't think I ever saw that. 78, so I would have been... pretty young. That was way before I was born. I mean,
Many of us. Not, I was too busy watching
Star Wars.
Well, I was about 9 years old when I saw it, so.
Yeah.
I was young when I really saw it, so it was very. At the time that I saw it, it was very traumatic. Yeah, like they would actually show where they'd line them up, the Jews, they'd line up in front of like.
Oh, that sounds familiar. I think I saw that part.
They'd show a trench, and then they'd basically the Nazis would shoot them, and they'd all fall in the trench, and then they'd show the scenes with the gas chamber, and I remember them distinctively because it was like really shocking. Like, how does this happen as a 9 year old seeing that on TV? It was pretty dramatic.
I might have seen parts of it because I'm sure my parents watched it. So I might have not sat down and watched the whole thing, but caught parts of it while they were watching it. And run out of the room in terror.
Yeah. Traumatized. There were no rules when I was watching TV. I had no like time frame or like I could just go do it. So, any TV?
I got TV.
All right.
I finished out Clone Wars. So,
is that the last one?
It's the last one we're going to get in a regular format.
Really? I heard yeah. Something about them moving to something else, but...
Well, Season 5 is the last season you're ever going to get on Cartoon Network, and the show is not going to move on to, like, Disney XD or whatever. The show is canceled. Like, the show is straight up canceled. But they do have... I mean, because of the way animation works and the amount of time it takes for them to produce episodes... they have, I don't know how much of it, but they have a good portion of season 6 already finished. Like,
why was it canceled, Micah? But is it because of ratings Disney? Or
no? Ratings are great. The show does nothing but make money. Because George Lucas does nothing but make money. But
Disney doesn't want their stuff showing on Cartoon Network. Is that
it? No? I think it has more to do with not. I think they're trying to suck attention away from everything in the Star Wars, like, because Clone Wars is so big. If I had to guess, they don't want to take the chance that people are like someone like me being like, I'm cool with Clone Wars, and so like I'm not as excited about Episode 7 because this is my Star Wars, you know. Which is silly, because it isn't like I wouldn't watch Episode 7, but I think there's sort of at Disney, it's a, whenever any company gets bought, there's a sort of shuffling and clearing of the deck, sort of, and it's like, well, this is old stuff, and so we're going to just shelve this stuff for whatever the new things are coming. Like, the studio is going to work on, they're working on a new cartoon. I'm not sure when it'll show up. It'll probably show up right before Episode 7 comes out, but it'll be related to that time frame. And it'll probably be something in between Episodes 6 and 7, in the way Clone Wars is in between Episodes 2 and 3. But they just wanted to shut Clone Wars down now.
Huh. Did it end good? Was there a good conclusion?
I mean,
it has some kind of resolution anyway.
I mean, there's a resolution to one of the... I mean, there's a resolution in a sense.
I just hope they don't kill Asuka. I hope
they don't kill her. Spoiler, she doesn't die.
Good.
But...
she's my favorite character, so...
That's what they want you to do. That's what they want you to think of her as. Like, they wouldn't kill her because, I mean, at least not in Season 5, because they have plans for the show to keep going, and she's a marketing phenom, so...
But it just seems like she has to die sometime.
Nope. No, she doesn't.
Because all the Jedi don't have to die. Killed all the Jedi, didn't they?
No. They did not kill all the Jedi. There's a lot of Jedi still around.
They're just Ben Kenobi-ish?
Yeah, they all... Yeah, like, the same way Obi-Wan's still alive. The same way Yoda was still alive. A lot of... Like, in the fiction, a lot of Jedi just disappear. So... Because, you know, they aren't all stupid. So a lot of them go disappearing during the Purge. And so there's a chance that Ahsoka survives this whole thing.
I gotta get caught up on that.
I watched the
new DVR soon, and I have to get an HD DVR. So I gotta kill my Young Justice and Clone Wars because I don't want to miss those. I think I can miss the Green Lantern, and I'll be okay.
I've never watched Green Lantern. Young Justice, I watched the end of that as well. It ended all right, but because it's only been around for 2 years, it's like whatever. It doesn't have the same impact as the ending of Clone Wars has, which is really heartbreaking. Like, sort of like a big soul-crushing ending to that season 5. So, and it does what it's supposed to do. Like, if you watch the end of season 5 and then watch episode 3, Anakin's actions almost make sense, which is not what happened the first time around. Like, the biggest flaw in that movie is that Anakin's like, I'm a Jedi, and then he's like, kill the little kids. Like, there's like no transition at all.
Yeah. But,
like, the whole show is about sowing distrust. Like, this whole, basically the entire season's kind of been about sowing the seeds of distrust about the Jedi, and no one can trust them because, you know, they're Jedi. What's up with them? Sort of situation, so.
Yeah, that's kind of my least favorite part of the storyline. Because I already know that's going to be... I already know what happens.
I still find it intriguing because I like that kind of stuff. And I'm not, like, bothered by knowing what happens later on. But it's still... like, it's fun to watch in the moment, sort of, for me.
How it happens.
So. I still have problems with the movie, though, how that...
Oh, the movie... Oh, listen.
No, I know. But the main thing that just bugs the shit out of me is, yes, you can see the distrust and the build-up and stuff. I don't see how it could turn him into wanting to kill kids or do what he did. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's dumb.
I can see how he could betray a Jedi for Palpatine, you know, go to the dark side. I cannot see what he did. Like, I cannot see the justification in what he did.
Well, okay, I can't.
I can't even, it's hard for me to even see the redemption, Micah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Knowing that he did that, and knowing that, yeah, Vader saves the day by throwing Palpatine and, you know, in that one Death Star into the tube or whatever, and him electrifying himself. It's just, God, it's just hard to, I don't know if it's just a barrier I have, but it's, those kids were innocent. Like, he had to have seen that there were, nope. That, yes, they were training and there was an innocence about him, but why would he kill him? Like,
the whole order is corrupt.
Yeah.
Listen, it doesn't make sense. That's the rationale, though.
Yeah, this is the part I struggle with.
He's a bad guy.
Yeah, he is.
He's just evil by the end.
He's a bad guy. Kill everything. So.
Who's your favorite NBA team, Micah? Just...
Golden State.
Okay.
The Wildcats.
Nice try.
The Buccaneers.
We'll bring the expert in, Bill. Provides.
No, it used to be the Hornets back when they were in Charlotte. And then they left.
Became the Oilers.
And moved to Edmonton.
Thank you.
I remember when Wayne Gretzky was on their team. Fantastic. Shooting some hoops. Fantastic.
You have a good
one time. I got a hat trick when I was a kid.
Yep.
on the
Basketball hat trick.
Basketball field.
On the basketball field.
Yep.
All right, good times.
Kick the goal. It was awesome. Good times.
Are your kids inheriting this ability, Bill? In sports?
Sports, love of sports?
Yeah.
They haven't exhibited any love of sports yet. Right now they're exhibiting love of Legos.
It's a good thing to love.
If Legos was a sport, they would be Olympic caliber. They would win the Nobel Prize of basketball.
We had one more question from Vicious. He says, what is your favorite cake? I think mine is
tasty cake.
Chocolate cake. But it can't be rich chocolate cake. I hate rich chocolate cake. I don't like rich chocolate, so it has to be like more milk chocolate cake. Sweet.
Like the cake part itself?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Either or.
Frosting.
I can't have the cake part too rich or the frosting too rich.
I don't believe in fake frosting.
I love fake frosting. Give me like peep frosting and I'm fine.
Wait, what's the difference between fake frosting and real frosting?
Doug and Heinz is awful.
Is it butter?
The taste.
They use a lot of lard.
The hardness.
Real frosting, the right?
Ability to eat it.
I mean, what's the real difference? Like, what's the difference in the material? Is it just butter versus shortening or something?
Not all the time. Because I don't think royal icing has any shortening in it at all. And that stuff is just... Some of it's made to look nice, and some of it's made to be tasty. Like, Swiss buttercream is made to be tasty.
Most of them have to refrigerate, but, like, Duncan Hines, you could just get off the shelf. Like, you don't have to refrigerate it. Maybe when you open it.
Gross. I don't like icing. I don't like a lot. I don't really like a lot of super sweet stuff anyway. So
if you had to pick a cake, would you pick something healthy like carrot cake? What would you?
No. That is in no way healthy, either way.
What's got carrots?
That means nothing. Oh. No, probably like a lemon cake. A nice soft lemon cake. Some Swiss buttercream icing, but not too much.
And you, Bill? Fish cakes?
I do like fish cakes.
Everyone likes a good fish cake.
Maybe a crab cake.
Ooh, do those count? I like crab cakes.
I like the Cheesecake Factory restaurant chain. They have a good red velvet cake.
Oh.
Like a regular just red velvet cake?
It's a red velvet cheesecake.
Ah.
So it's got red velvet cake and cheesecake and white chocolate.
I never used to eat cheesecake, but I'm starting to, I think, like it. But
it's good. It's got cheese in it.
I can't judge it yet because I haven't eaten enough of cheesecake.
What's good and what's not.
You have to eat a whole lot more of it. You have to just go and eat a lot more cake.
All right.
Otherwise, buttercream.
Any food you guys want to mention?
Let's think.
Barb made her chili this last Friday or Wednesday, and that was good.
Hold on. Wait.
I'm going to smother it, and I think we made burgers, and I'd like to put some cheese on the burger and then smother it with chili.
Like, are you talking about, like, real chili or green chili?
No, this is red chili. This is like a...
Like a meaty chili?
Texas chili. Okay.
Like hamburger meat in it, or like a different
crockpot chili.
Okay,
but it's not like just green chili. Like I love green chili sauce. Like you can smother.
Is there green chili in it?
No, this is more like a cayenne pepper, tomato sauce type chili, beans and meat.
So you put beans in it. Some people don't like beans in their chili.
I like beans in my chili.
I like only beans in my chili.
Well, yes.
And fish.
You like fish in your chili? I don't think that would go good.
I have not tried that. No. Soy. I like soy in my chili.
We had fish soup.
Fish
soup. It was like chowder. But actually good, because I don't actually like chowder.
I love clam chowder.
I just think most of the time, restaurants just kind of like make this thick, milky thing. And me being lactose intolerant and all, I don't have much use for that.
I like potato chowder. So, you can't have a glass of milk, Micah?
I mean, I can. I can drink it.
You just shit it immediately?
I think I'm like a more allergic than intolerant.
How about cheese?
Cheese is fine.
Does it hurt your stomach?
Not fine. But like cheese and yogurt, because of the processes that go into killing the milk out of it, basically.
Killing the milk.
What's the milk protein?
Die, milk! Die! Kill the milk.
Isn't it the protein that people have a problem with?
Yes.
And that like helps break it down or something?
That's to be true. I say yes like I know, but I think that's what it is. And so, like, cheeses and yogurts aren't as big a deal as just straight-up milk. And other things.
Straight-up milk is nasty anyway. Nasty.
We gotta pasteurize it first.
Unless you're a hippie who gives you a boner.
That's, oh, God.
A hippie
I would kill every one of those people.
A hippie boner.
You get a hippie boner when you drink milk.
It reminds you of sucking the teats. He is feeding the cats with the teats.
This cow has the big teats. This one has little ones. I get an erection when I pull on the teats. I don't know why, but
so,
I like it.
So, Bill, did you like hippie masala? Like, because Keith wanted justification.
I didn't think it was bad. I just didn't know what the point of it was. And I gave up halfway because they weren't getting to any point.
Okay, is it safe that I could tweet that Bill watched it and quit halfway through?
Yeah, you can say that.
Okay, I'm going to have to tweet him. Micah watched 27 seconds of it and stopped.
I just can't. It's so awful.
All right, I got to tweet him on this one.
There was just something missing. The characters, I guess. None of them really...
Well, they're all terrible people. Terrible people to begin with, so...
And that one guy, man, I want to be a yogi. Just smoke massive amounts of dope in the forest. In the jungles. That's it. That's all he's doing.
That guy had to really stink.
That one yogi, like the Indian guy, he was just smoking and just laughing. Just laughing. Yogi, what a scam. He's spiritual. It's because you smoke so much dope, you start...
You start to see things.
Talking to the trees. I'm going to go there. I'm going to be a hippie.
You're going to quit your work.
That's right.
All right. Any other food? Or are we done?
I'm done.
Yeah, I can't think of anything useful.
Have you heard of St. Patty's and not wearing green and getting pinched?
I've heard of it. I heard that you get your ass kicked for doing it too.
Yeah, I've heard of it. Not until later in life, though. Never when I was a kid. I guess we didn't have that in Canada.
Yeah, because somebody tweeted me and just said they had never heard of that.
Oh, no, I've heard of it. Just think it's a mistake.
Why is Barb pinching you today?
No. All right, I think we're done. We could wrap up. This has been Geek Brunch, episode, what, help me?
Ooh. 179? 180?
I'd love to help.
Let me look.
It's 170-something, I think, still.
I'm guessing 179.
170.
Look at that.
Am I right?
No, it's 178.
Ah.
I'm so excited for Bill too.
That's close.
178. And you can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com. And forum for geeks, scroll down to Geek Brunch. Follow us on Twitter. Do you even check the at Geek Brunch podcast one? Or is it like...
Bill? No one says anything.
Well, no. I don't know. You created it, Bill. The at Geek Brunch.
Yeah. At Geek Podcast. Or whatever it is.
But you can reach us at our own individual.
I'm on it right now. I'll post right now.
DBM00 at @do_what is Micah, and I am at Mike Myers Brunch. You can follow us on Facebook by going to like the Geek Brunch podcast page. And I think that's it. Oh, emails, which we don't see much of. Mike, Bill, and Micah at comicbooknoise.com. I think that's it. And have a good lunch or dinner or brunch or whatever you guys are doing. I need to go eat lunch soon.
It's like dinner time for me.
I have to go get a prescription and probably read some comics. And then back to work, because I was off for 3 days. Yeah. It was a good time.
I saw you tweeting like in the middle of the day. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, we went to Manitou Springs, which I think both of you guys would really love. It's kind of like a throwback. It's like a hippie witch town and a throwback arcade, like really old shit. Like,
you talked about that before, right?
Yeah, we're talking about games that pinball machines.
That's a town that has a comic book store?
There's a horrible comic book store there. The worst comic book store I've ever seen. But there is a comic book store there. There's a lot of places where you could buy like Vampire Blood and shit like that and go on ghost tours. And it is kind of a town where there are hippies there. Like they'll play on the street. And they'll smell, but they're good musicians. They have cool. If you want to listen to them, it's a very scenic place. So if you like scenery, there's a lot of cool. They have one of my favorite pizza places. My favorite pizza place now is Dion's because we have it here in the Springs. But they have Hell's Kitchen pizza, and they have like a really hot pizza that I like a lot with spicy sausage and jalapenos and chili and all that good stuff. So that was a lot of fun. And then we hiked Garden of the Gods one day, which is very scenic and it's a cool place to hike if you like to hike. And I can't remember. Oh, we went to Denver to the zoo on another day. And that was a lot of fun. I always like to go to the zoo, especially when you could take cool pictures. Like we take pictures of a lion that was like right next to us through glass, obviously. But
it's probably a good time to go because it's not too hot. So the animals are actually.
Yeah, there was a lot of animal activity, but it was really packed. Like I think it's spring break here for a lot of places. Yeah. And the school was pretty packed. And we ate a lot of places, so that was fun. I like to eat. I'm getting fat. But I'll talk to you guys in 2 weeks. If you want to tag team on any books that you're going to read, let me know. Like you did on Twitter. I know Micah wouldn't read Cross, so.
No.
Well, he can read the web. It's on the web, so.
Yeah, you could have at least read the first chapter. But you would have saw him fucking a dolphin and said, that's enough.
I'm out.
Probably, yeah.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you guys in 2 weeks.
Sounds good.
Bye.
Bye.
Mike, are you going to put the episode out again?
I sure am.
All right. Thanks, man.
No problem.
Bye.
Bye.